to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from August 13th, 1997.
From the high desert and the great American Southwest, I bid you all good evening or good morning, as the case may be, across all these many, many varied time zones, from the Hawaiian and Tahitian island chains in the west all the way east to the Caribbean and Cuba, the U.S. Virgin Islands, south into South America, north to the pole. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm Art Bell, top of the morning. Great to be here. Here's what's going to happen tonight. In the first hour, we're going to have open lines. And then at 11 o'clock, we're going to have Major Ed Dames. And I originally thought, oh, well, we'll do it at the beginning of the program. And then I thought, no, let's have 1 hour of open lines, because there really are a number of topics that I want to cover with you and things that I want to say this morning before we launch. And pre-launch is welcome to KVNA. People of Flagstaff, Arizona can now hear the entire program thanks to KVNA. We have moved affiliates in Flagstaff. And now it's KVNA, and they will carry the program from now until 6 a.m. And they will do this Tuesday through Saturday, I guess. At any rate, you're going to get the entire program in Flagstaff, so welcome aboard. Glad to have you. I just heard on the news that the a national safety organization responsible for automobile safety has decided to change the name. They're not going to talk about auto accidents anymore. They're only going to talk about crashes. Everybody's changing names for things these days. No more automobile accidents. They're not accidents. From their point of view, they're preventable. Therefore, they will call them crashes. I wonder how long radio broadcasting is going to hold up. Maybe it'll become radio dispersing or something else. I don't know. With respect to the news, the big news out there, of course, is UPS has gone on strike. The first, as a matter of fact, strike at United Parcel Service has disrupted package deliveries, and boy, has it. Across the U.S., no new talks scheduled to end the work stoppage. Only a few thousand of the 185,000 Teamsters at the company crossed the picket line, so for now, it looks like it's going to hold. In the meantime, business is going to suffer because the mail service will not pick up the slack. FedEx can only pick up part of the slack, and so it is going to hurt business. There is no question about it. Now, I've had a number of faxes from UPS employees who privately say they're not at all happy with this, and they rather thought the deal offered by UPS was a good deal. That certainly does not cover the all of the opinions, and CNN has been out interviewing some of the loyal and faithful who very much think that it is a proper strike. I don't know, you tell me. I know I've got a lot of UPS drivers who listen to this program. In fact, gazillions of them. And I would imagine tonight they're probably sitting home listening to the program, so I wonder what you guys think. Now, the U.S. Supreme Court blocked the execution of a California death row inmate Monday, just hours before he was scheduled to die at San Quentin. As a matter of fact, he had ordered his last meal and was about to be moved to the death watch cell. When word came, the execution was blocked. High Court upheld a Sunday federal appeals court ruling that threw out Thompson's death sentence and reversed his 1983 rape conviction. The rape conviction was a, quote, special circumstance that, in connection with murder, made Thompson eligible for the death penalty under California law. We have yet another government explanation for UFOs in the news, in Reuters, at this hour, and it has been breaking throughout the weekend. This is becoming tiresome. Now, let me read you from Reuters. Now, national security officials systematically lied to explain reports of UFOs at the height of the Cold War, according to a CIA study released Monday, in what amounts to the first admission of federal deception on the issue. Really? The study said that most reports of unidentified flying objects in the 1950s and 60s stemmed from glimpses of super-secret U.S. spy planes, the U-2, and the SR-71 Blackbird. Rather than disclose the existence of these aircraft, the military put out false stories. The study was written by a historian at the National Reconnaissance Office, which operates military satellites. So they're suggesting that accounts for about half of the reports during that period. I'm kind of wondering why official government agencies, the Air Force, and now even the CIA, are coming out trying to explain again and again and again and again UFO sightings. It seems like they've got a great big interest in explaining UFO sightings. An awful big interest. Maybe too much of an interest. In other words, I'm not exactly sure. Each new admission, each new revelation makes me doubt all the more. It does not begin to convince me all the more. It makes me doubt all the more. And so this story now is everywhere. Headlines, U.S. feared Soviets would fake UFOs. All kinds of headlines are flashing around the country over this CIA admission. Oh, here's a cute one. A Japanese scientist has developed, brace yourself, an artificial womb. This is from Reuters. An artificial womb capable of incubating goat fetuses and, in 10 years, human fetuses. According to the scientist, quote, we're aiming eventually to use the technology for human fetuses, but it may take up to 10 years. So let me see if I've got this straight. We can clone a human being, right? Well, everybody thinks we can. We probably already have done so, privately, secretly. Even though the president moves to pass laws against cloning, think about it for a minute. We can clone Dolly. We can put human genes in sheep. I believe we can or will shortly be able to clone human beings. So we could take a cloned human being and grow them in an artificial womb. Wonder what, you know, you got to wonder whether they're going to need us after a while. A cloned human being in an artificial womb. Oh, one other item that I would like to call your attention to is a very serious item for me. Actually, two of them. The lighter one first. I'm going to give you two reasons to go to the website right now. Late last night, just before Dreamland went on the air, Keith Rowland called me and said, hey, Art, there are two of the newest incredible crop circles you've ever seen. And they are. They are remarkable, remarkable aerial photographs. We are having the most remarkable crop season. Crop circle season, he says. Corrects himself. It is incredible what's going on out there. And there is no way on God's green earth, and that's what I meant to say, that human beings are responsible for what you can now see up there on my website. No way on God's yet, and for a while longer, green earth. Go take a look at those in my website right now. Dash, dash, dash. New subject. There is a UFO debunker. I guess that's how he'd bill himself. I don't know. Named Carl Korff. And I began getting faxes toward the butt end of last week saying that Cal Korff had made a bunch of statements about me that were outrageous. That, among other things, I had called several of my affiliates and threatened my affiliates with yanking my affiliation from their radio station should they allow Cal Korff on their radio station. He went on to further state that, you'll recall back to the Richard Hoagland extravaganza in Phoenix, that I had some sort of financial connection to that, and that there was information that I was not going to allow out to ruin it ahead of time. I mean, just absolutely outrageous allegations, and I admit I flew through the roof. Now, I didn't really believe it. I wouldn't believe somebody would say this of me until I heard it myself. There is a program very much like mine on earlier in the evening in some markets called Sightings, and Sightings, the radio show, and he made this statement on Sightings. And so I did what you could imagine I would do, or you would probably do under the same circumstances. I didn't even know who the hell Carl Korff was. I went to the site, and I listened to the program. It blew my mind. I would no more call one of my affiliates. He actually said that. I would no more call one of my, you know, look, talk radio is made up of all kinds of divergent opinion. A good, bad, right, left, interesting, boring. And I would no more call one of my affiliates and threaten them with the yanking of my affiliation if they would put somebody on the air, then I am the man in the moon. I would never do that. It runs against every grain of my broadcasting soul. I would never do such a thing, and I turned absolutely beet red. So here's what's going to happen. Number one, you can hear what Mr. Korff had to say for yourself by visiting my website. We simply pulled that segment off AudioNet, which apparently supplies Sightings with a place to play their programs on the net, as AudioNet thankfully does for us. They're very good people in Dallas. And I pulled that particular segment with Mr. Korff saying the things he said and have put it up on my website so you might digest yourself what this man has said. And Wednesday, we will have Mr. Korff on this program at the beginning of the program, 10 o'clock Pacific time. And Mr. Korff can then say what he wishes to say with regard to his comments about me. That'll be Wednesday at the beginning of the program. I have rarely been so angry and outraged as I was over what was said. So if you want to hear it, it's up there. We're pretty straightforward on everything on this program. And toward the end of the week, I said, if Mr. Korff has in fact said these things, then I would be more than happy to have Mr. Korff and any individuals at any radio stations that he claims I called on the air to address Mr. Korff personally right here. And to allow Mr. Korff to prove his case, that offer still stands. Mr. Korff, as of yet, has not come up with the names of any individuals. He has come up with the call letters of two radio stations, which he now claims he cannot verify as ones that Art Bell really called. So people really need to be careful about the things that they say about other people, I think, is the lesson there. Or they need to know things are a fact before they libel other people. And Mr. Korff will be here to address that personally on Wednesday evening. Tomorrow night, we will have Bob Guccione, who is the publisher of Penthouse Magazine. And he will probably talk of many things, one of them being his wife, who tragically has cancer, and not so tragically, I believe, is in the middle of recovery from cancer with a method that Mr. Guccione claims should be available to everybody out there, and so he's moving toward a class action lawsuit in that regard. It should be a very interesting program. We will discuss as well First Amendment issues, that sort of thing, but particularly with regard to cancer, I think he's got a lot to say. Should be interesting. I will eventually do an interview for Penthouse Magazine as well. And by the way, there is a brief interview that appeared in the present issue of Rolling Stone. That's also on the website. So, you know, there's a lot of good reasons for you to go to the website right now. This is a story that fortunately did not change my life, but I'll tell it briefly. Today is our anniversary. And it's a kind of an interesting story. Ramona's here. We didn't know it. Somehow, you know, life has been flashing by. We've been so busy with the network, with business, and with personal life.
We flat forgot.
Yeah, we flat forgot. And so we got this call about midday from my publisher, bless his heart. Werner Riefling, and he said, well, congratulations, it's your anniversary. And I said, hold on a moment, please. I put him on hold, and I said, say, hon, is today our anniversary? She runs to the calendar. Oh, my, it's our anniversary. So, folks, 6 years going strong today. Is our anniversary. I love you, baby.
I love you more than ever.
All right. That's these things come upon you in strange ways sometimes. Thanks, Werner. At least this is better than I forgot it and she remembered it, or better than she remembered it and I remembered it and she forgot it. You know, that sort of thing. When one, at least we both forgot it until it was called to our attention. That's a better way to go. So today is our anniversary. Anyway, that's kind of the layout for what's coming this evening. And because I had so much stuff that I wanted to get out in the first hour, I said to Ed, no, let's begin at 11 now. As a precursor to the Ed Dames program coming up, or the Ed Dames appearance at the top of the hour, I should tell you that I have viewed at least a good portion of his remote viewing Module 1 tape. And it is incredibly well done. It's kind of a great experiment, turning these modules loose, which will result in the end in the average American, or worldwide for that matter, being able to do what Ed Dames does. I'm still contemplating the consequences of that. It's the end of secrets. I believe remote viewing to be absolutely real. Now, have mistakes been made? Yes. Are all remote viewers the same? No, they're not. But remote viewing, real? Not only yes, but hell yes. Major Ed Dames coming up in about a half hour. Between now and then, open lines.
This is Premier Networks. That was Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM on this Somewhere in Time. Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from August 13th, 1997.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to the best talk radio in the nighttime. No brag, just fact. We're the best. And it's because all of you, and I want you to know I appreciate it. Here are 50 rules for a man, a man's rules for women. 50 rules, it says here, a man's rules for women. So listen carefully, women, because while this is humor, there is much wisdom in what you're about to hear. One, learn to work the toilet seat. If it's up, put it down. Don't cut your hair, ever. Don't make us guess. If you ask a question you really don't want an answer to, expect to get an answer you really don't want to hear. Sometimes he's not thinking about you. Live with it. He's never thinking about the relationship. Get rid of your cat, and no, it's not different. It's just like every other cat. I object to that, of course. Dogs are better than cats. I thoroughly object to that. Sunday equals sports. It's like the full moon or the changing of the tides. Let it be. Shopping is not everybody's idea of a good time. Anything you wear is fine. Really. You have enough clothes. You have too many shoes. Crying is blackmail. Use it if you must, but don't expect us to like it. Your brother is an idiot. Ask for what you want. Subtle hints don't work. No, he doesn't know what day it is. He never will. Mark anniversaries on the calendar. Share the bathroom. Share the closet. Yes and no are perfectly acceptable answers. We're to number 21. A headache that lasts for 17 months is a problem. See a doctor. Nothing says I love you like sex in the morning. Foreign films are best left to foreigners. Check the oil once in a while. And rule 25, don't give us 50 rules when 25 will do. Well, there you have it, folks. 50 rules, really 25, for women who really want to know the truth about men. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Thank you very much, Art. This is Ken in Las Vegas.
Yes.
Yes, I just want to congratulate you. You did a fantastic job Friday night with David John Oates. I was up for the full 5 hours.
Glad you enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was good because Mr. Oates had rapid fire reversals.
Yes.
I mean, it's just like...
Yeah,
like,
I actually think it was the best program we have done to date with David Oates.
I'd say you'd be up on the top 10 of your all-time favorite shows. I mean, if you ever get a chance to play it again. What I was going to say is a couple of things that I like Oates to do is on a reversal is James Earl Ray, whether he did or did not pull the trigger.
I'm not sure that we have enough audio from Mr. Ray publicly available to make that determination. You're, of course, correct. That would be very, very interesting. But I'm not sure we have enough to do it.
Like, exactly. Also, Thursday night, your David John Oates students know what I'm talking about. On a local show, I'm going to play a reversal, and it's about one of our elected officials here in Nevada, a member of Goals 2000. And, you know, I talk about that because the subject was United Nations and education. But in reverse, I said very clear-cut, because I record my reversals, very clear-cut, he's an imbecile. And I think I'm going to play that Thursday night. It's so clear, and that's exactly what I was thinking about. I don't want to mention the name of that.
No, don't. I have given David, thank you, permission to reverse me. And so it'd be interesting to see what David comes up with. He can, of course, I'm on the air 5 hours a night, so he can pick his time and pick his reversals. It'd be kind of interesting. It'd be kind of fun. There are a number of interesting reversal possibilities. One of them, of course, if I were to construct a list of what people would like, Mel's Hole, the Area 51 episode, the pilot, of course, who flew into Area 51 ostensibly and then was shot down, allegedly. A very dramatic piece. Would be interesting to do reversals on that. There should have been maximum stress, so there should be a lot of good reversals available from that one. By the way, one of these nights later in the week, I'm going to open up a Men in Black line. How many of you think that a man in black would actually call in anonymously, or maybe with some sort of voice changer, and talk to us about his duties? Well, you all know you have to fish hard to catch the one you want, so we may go through a few false starts, but later in the week, watch for it. When I get in the mood, I intend to open a Man in Black line. Oh, by the way, finally, the movie Contact came to my fine little town, and so my wife and I went to see Contact Sunday. And I must say, it was a staggeringly good movie. If you have not yet seen it, you must. You just must. And it was kind of interesting when I had Leonard Nimoy here as a guest. He enjoyed the special effects, but did not think much of the movie. And interestingly, he's the only one, Leonard Nimoy is the only one that I've talked to that has not raved about the movie. Now, I think the guys who rate movies, you know, the Siskels and Eberts and so forth, are giving it a kind of a thumbs down. I'm not sure about specifically about Siskel and Ebert, you know, but reviewers are giving it thumbs down. And I just cannot imagine why. It is probably the best movie of its genre that I have ever seen. And it left me in deep thought. And I'm still in deep thought about it. And if any of you would like to discuss it, we can do so. It was a profound movie. Jodie Foster did a tremendous job. In fact, there is somebody I'd like to interview, Jodie Foster, about that motion picture. Maybe about her career generally. She's done several movies that that I have a great affection for. Remember Hannibal Lecter? Oh, my. Anyway, Contact was a movie to be reckoned with, no question. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, this is Reed from Reedsville.
Reed from Reedsville. Reedsville what?
North Carolina.
North Carolina.
Yes,
all right.
I just finished reading the Contact book. It was quite good.
It is quite good, yes.
We'll get the movie sometime. Art, I will hope you'll have some time to do the Truth or Trash thing again.
You have hum on your phone, sir. Terrible, terrible hum.
It's a $10 phone.
Uh-huh. Well, you've got $10 audio.
But,
yeah, we'll do, you know, this. It's some nights we do Truth or Trash without even doing it.
I noticed that, too.
Well, see, there you are. So, I mean, we will officially do that again one night.
Please do.
But wouldn't you like to hear a Men in Black line?
I heard that a little while ago, and I've not seen the movie, so I'm not really sure.
Oh, the movie's a comedy.
I like the vampire line.
You like the vampire line?
That was so much fun. That was the Truth or Trash now.
We could do another vampire line, but I've never done a Man in Black line. I like new things.
Well, I'll be listening to it, and you'll be responsible for more sleepless nights.
All right, my friend. Thank you. $10 phone. Sounded like a $10 phone. People, listen to me when I tell you, use care in the selection of your telephones. Cheap telephones sound cheap. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning. Going once, going twice, gone. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi.
Where are you?
I'm calling from California.
Okay.
Just really excited about this whole show. I've been interested in UFOs and all this kind of genre, as you call it, for about 8 years. And I had a very interesting experience.
Well, what do you think about the CIA coming out and saying that lied to the American people to protect the U-2 and other, you know, the SR-71 Blackbird, and they're saying that accounts for at least half of the sightings during all those years. Now, why are they doing this?
Because they want to keep, there's so much to this whole conspiracy, if you want to call it a conspiracy. There's so much to it. There's so many things they have to cover up. There's so many things that they're probably afraid of, too, that makes them just, oh, my God, we got to cover this up. We got to cover this up. Because
yeah.
If we bring this out, then they're going to, you know, it's just there's so much to it. You can't even, you know, I've just learned so much lately. I'm just so happy. I've been listening to you for the past 3 weeks. I've heard about you a lot, and I'm just so excited. I cannot wait to come home and, like, 10 o'clock. I'm here. You know what I mean? I've been trying to get a hold of you, and I'm so happy. I'm so proud of you, and I have a lot of respect for you.
Thank you.
Being on there.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I just come in here and do what I feel is right. I'm a big believer in trying to do what I think is right and telling the truth.
The truth is there. You have to fight for it, and that's why. That one guy called, tried to get you, you know, say bad things about you because, you know, you're bringing out the truth and people can't handle the truth, you know? And
some people can't. That is correct.
Some people can't, you know, but I'm like, you know, I'm so nervous right now because I've been trying to get a hold of you for so long, as you probably heard before, but I just love everything you talk about and I'm too nervous, so, like, I could go and maybe.
All right, you will find now the next time you call.
Yeah.
It will be easier.
Yeah.
A lot easier. You know,
okay.
I mean, this is the first time you ever got through, right?
Yeah.
What is your first name?
Claire.
Claire?
Yeah.
There's been a couple of Claires in my life.
Really?
Yeah. I had a boss named Claire. Morning,
yeah.
Claire.
All right.
She was, without a doubt, the meanest, most cantankerous.
Not me.
No, not you, Claire. Claire, thank you for the call and call again.
Hey, thank you so much.
Take care. However, she was a great lady. She was a great lady. When I wrote my first book, I wrote about it. She was my program director at a Las Vegas radio station for, 11, 12 years, somewhere in there. And cantankerous? Oof. Hard to deal with. But did she know radio? Yeah, you bet she knew radio, and she taught me a lot. So, you know, it's one of those kinds of things. I remember Claire kind of like I remember my drill sergeant from Lackland Air Force Base in Texas with some the same sort of mixture of respect and loathing and fear. And but don't forget the respect part, because she did know what she was doing, and she taught me a lot. east of the Rockies. You're on the air. Hi.
Art Bell.
Hello.
Yes, this is Ken from Philadelphia.
Hi, Ken.
Yeah, I'm actually I'm a first-time caller. I didn't catch the number for that.
Any line will do.
Thanks. I've just been checking out your program. I've only listened a few times. I just wanted to make a few comments.
Okay.
When you had the colonel on, I forget his name.
Then, Colonel Corso, Philip J. Corso.
Right. And there was a caller, somebody said being a threat to national security. I don't know if you recall that. And then you went and he hung up on you. And you went to say how you're a truth
seeker. Oh, he said what I was doing was a threat to national security. Yeah.
People, I mean, he sounded kind of scared about that.
I remember,
at least a firm belief. Well, in any case, you responded, you know, by saying you're a truth seeker. And I also consider myself to be a truth seeker. That's something I also feel is probably the highest thing really there is in life. That's my opinion. What I don't understand is the fear people have of the truth. I mean, it's possible that truth affects people's security in life, people's security based on, all kinds of things which sometimes seem to be kind of fake, superficial, you know, people, looking for their own self-interest.
I'm not exactly sure that the world would operate properly at all if you couldn't tell lies anymore. And it's interesting that you bring this up because David Oates in reverse speech or Ed Dames with remote viewing, both of these disciplines are kind of cutting through the bull. And they're going to help us to the truth. But it's not going to be an easy journey because try it sometime. Don't try it with your wife, but try it with somebody else.
I'm not married.
Half an hour. Well, that's good. Half an hour.
Happy anniversary, by the way.
Thank you. Half an hour of the absolute truth between two people who know each other will more than likely result in a split between those two people forevermore. People lie. And without lies, I wonder what the world would be like. You think it would be a better place, and I would hope it would be a better place, but I'm not really sure. I'm not really sure.
That's something to really contemplate.
I know the world is made up of many lies. With regards to Cal Korf and the lies he told about me, I felt an absolute responsibility to respond.
Oh, yeah.
But that's just one example. I mean, there are lies going on all worldwide every day. Probably half of what is said is a lie. And I wonder if we had one day of absolute truth, it would probably be the end of the world. Somebody'd push the button for the end of the day.
Yeah. but, I mean, it's such an... I mean, I've learned that in my life, I tell the truth. There's sometimes you have to lie, little things. But when it comes to things of which I consider high importance in life, I set truth as the highest standard. I've always lived by that ethic. That's really my only comment. I'm going to be listening to the show more. Right now I'm looking at the your studio cam here while I'm talking to you.
Oh, you are. You see me sitting here with my www.getalife.com
t-shirt.
There
it is. I see it. I've been seeing that show. And you have quite a website here. I got to check it out more. But I'm going to listen to you more. There's a lot of names, a lot of things you say that I'm not really familiar with. So, I really hope to gain some familiarity.
Well, you listen after the news coming up because Ed Dames is a remarkable, remarkable individual.
Yeah.
All right?
And that's quite a lot of people that have visited your website there. That's
that's right. I didn't even say anything. We crested the 4 million mark since the first of the year. And I think we're 50 or 60,000 past that now.
Wow.
So it's busy.
Oh, you're smoking a cigarette.
Yeah. I know.
Me too.
How politically incorrect, huh? Do you know how many messages I've had about that? How can you smoke nationally like that? You know what I say to them?
What do you say?
Have a good morning, sir.
One more comment.
Very quickly.
You're very good at advertising. Got to do what you got to do.
Well, that's, you know why? It circles right back to your first comments.
Yeah.
You don't advertise things you don't believe in.
That's true. That's
and if you advertise things that you have used and you really believe to be true, it's easy. It's like it's just like falling off a bridge. It's a piece of cake. You know, take one step.
All right, we'll get on with the show. I'm gonna be listening.
All right, later.
All right.
Take care. That's all you need. You need to believe in what you're selling. And if you do that, then you don't have to have people say, please buy my product. Keep my show on the air. We'll go off the air if you don't buy my product. I didn't why people buy products. They buy them because they get good deals. And if you know what you're selling, you can give them good deals. It's really that simple. Kind of like the truth. If you tell it, it doesn't come back to haunt you later.
The trip back in time continues with Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM. More Somewhere in Time coming up. Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from August 13, 1997.
Well, good morning. Yes, it is our anniversary. A fact we had to find out earlier today from our publisher. 6 years, folks, and counting. And I'll tell you what I did. Not only did I have Ramona come in last hour, but during the top of the hour, I had some fun with Keith, too. Keith Rowland. During the top of the hour, I had Ramona come in and get in the photograph, so the studio shot for about the next hour will be of Ramona and myself. It's kind of a cute picture. She just came in here and we snapped away. And so if you go up to the website, the studio cam, you'll see it. We'll leave it up there for about an hour and then go back to live shots. I called Keith up and I said, well, Keith, I had to do it. The first live nude studio cam shot. He went, what? Ran upstairs. He's fun. And he's good. That's the webmaster of www.artbell.com. And there are a lot of really good reasons to go up there this night. A lot of very good reasons. So go. Now, coming Ed Dames, Major Ed Dames. Major Ed Dames, in the late 70s and early 80s, was a targeting officer, a training officer for something called remote viewing. And he's going to argue with me on a couple of these points I know. We all know what psychics are, many of them, Gene Dixon, Edgar Cayce. We could go back and cite many people who had or apparently seemed to have natural talent to predict events in the past. So then what is remote viewing? Well, the government spent over a period of years about $20 million of your tax dollars funding the program that Major Ed Dames was part of, was the targeting officer for, the training officer. I believe remote viewing is absolutely real. In his videotape, he says, or somebody says, I don't know, it's a statement in quotes, technical remote viewing is a scientifically repeatable problem-solving process done by a person to gain information about a specific target, a person, place, thing, or event anywhere in time, past, present, or future. That is remote viewing. Now, I tend to say that remote viewing is a form of disciplined psychic ability. But you probably somewhat disagree with that. Welcome, Ed.
Oh, thank you. Happy anniversary.
Thank you. I just found out about it myself. Fortunately, my wife and I found out about it at the same time. That's better that way.
Very fortunate.
Yes. Do remote viewers ever have problems like that, Ed?
We have to turn our attention to a target for about 45 minutes, and we've got to be focused before we realize we have either a problem or a solution on our hands.
Uh-huh. So you could be sitting there focusing on gas canisters in Iraq when your wife walks in and says, guess what, it's our anniversary.
Yeah, and then you've got a big problem.
Hey, let's go back. People always call attention to mistakes that you have made or things you have said that are inaccurate. The A-10 aircraft that crashed, they say, in Colorado, you made two predictions about it. One, the pilot would be dead. Two, that the plane would be found in Arizona. And I'm not saying that it hasn't been. You know what, Ed? There's kind of a lack of information about that right now. They claim they found the pilot's remains, but they really have not found the whole aircraft. They found little tiny pieces of the aircraft, and the rest of the aircraft has, as of yet, not been recovered.
Well, the bombs, could, 400 or 500 pounders, could very well have been jettisoned in the northeast corner of Arizona. They haven't found the bombs. And the reason I think I've mentioned this before, the reason we took on that project, which was a one-nighter, we worked late one night to do that, was merely to ascertain whether or not the aircraft and the pilot was intact.
Uh-huh.
And that is there, and we put 100% probability, that is 100% likelihood, on the data that the pilot was dead and the plane was not intact. As I mentioned before, the information about the location was about 70 to 80%. And so that was not a 100% likelihood. In other words, we would have had to work another night or another day to determine the location of the aircraft, the wreckage itself, at 100%.
Indeed, I recall you saying that the location was at about 90%.
That's right. And we qualify all the data that we put out in reports. We recently worked a follow-up report on JonBenet Ramsey murder, as well as the disappearance of a Hollywood screenwriter, Gary DeVore. And we put likelihoods on all of the data. What if 100% likelihood is placed most of the time on life or death, whether or not a person is dead or alive, that's fairly easy for us to do fairly quickly.
There are so many things that a remote viewer could target out there, Ed. How do you... Wait a minute. Before we even launch into that aspect of it, maybe we ought to... I gave a brief explanation, which I lifted from your tape, which, by the way, I should tell everybody, I've got your tape, and it is a remarkably slick, well-done production. Ed, congratulations. It's really, really a good tape. Somebody obviously spent a very great deal of time in production. Boy, is it well done.
Well, we owe a good deal of that to our editor, William Guzecki at Ultravision. He took something that, although fascinating in terms of interest, it's still a classroom environment, and it's very easy to fall asleep, even if you're interested in something like technical remote viewing. But William Guzecki made it into what it is, and so he should take a lot of the credit, as well as the rest of our team.
You're absolutely correct. The production values are utterly superior, so my congratulations to everybody involved. And there was a glitch, a time problem with getting the tape out, but the tape has now mainly gone out, I think, to everybody who ordered from you, and any other lagging orders or people who didn't get it should contact you, and they will get it, correct?
That's correct. Anybody that we have not called or faxed. And that's about 2,000 people. The reason we had to do that was because we had to pull the plug on our original distributor, who we found less than scrupulous. And we cannot work with someone we can't trust.
And so all of that took time, and then finally you had to start even filling the orders and eating some of what was not sent out by somebody else. And so anyway, all that baloney aside, the tapes, thankfully, are out, and they are incredible, and... So let's begin at the beginning. Give us, as usual, I always have to ask for it because there's a lot of new listeners out there, Ed. What is technical remote viewing? What is remote viewing?
You were mentioning natural psychics. And
yes.
And in fact, as many people would agree, this is an innate ability. In fact, it's our birthright. it's very much like language. Language is a potential, but it must be learned. And in remote viewing, the way we do it, very structured, has to, like language, be learned. It's a taught skill.
Mm-hmm.
The discovery, in other words, a good analogy would be the syntax and grammar for the way that unconscious mind communicates information to conscious awareness. That discovery was made in 1983 in a laboratory, and we took that into the deep dark world of military intelligence and began to develop it as a military intelligence collection tool. And it took a number of years to get it to the point where it was consistent enough to be employed to support military operations. But it remained a top secret technique until SciTech in 1989 took it public.
Huh. How many changes did you, you now run a private company called SciTech and you train people. And I recall during all the early shows that we did, you said your training schedule was booked through, God, I don't remember, 1998 or something or another.
Yes.
Way ahead, so you couldn't take students.
We have only two more classes left. The tapes are a far more effective way of getting that information on the streets to the masses. Our next class is an interesting class. There are two it's a class of three, two neurosurgeons and a Gong Fu master in the same class.
Really?
Yes.
That's quite a combination.
Yes.
I thought the first example shown on your videotape of the young lady was quite remarkable. And it demonstrates how remote viewing works. And I just thought it was very well done anyway.
What we wanted to do was to show people right off the bat that what we do when we remote view. Do we stand on our head? Do we immerse ourselves in a sensory deprivation tank? Those kind of things. No, we don't do that. We sit at a table and go through the process that you saw on the video.
All right. And what I saw was I saw Ed Dames give two series of numbers to this young lady. And then she began putting on paper the images that she got as a result of those numbers. And I won't give it away, Ed, because I don't want to give away the tape, but she nailed, even as new as she was, she nailed the target. And we got to see what the target was. You'll have to watch the tape to see it all, but she did it. And I guess it's absolutely real, and it's the end of secrets. Now you're putting out, how many modules? You've got module one out, module two is about to come out.
Two is out in September.
September. There will be a total of how many modules?
The module three will be an advanced module, and everything after that is a professional technical series that are geared specifically to disciplines like forensics, archaeology, space science, medicine, those kinds of things.
Okay.
But the real meat of the home study course is the four tape set in module two that's out in September. This module one, that is on the streets, is the introductory module, and it proves to people that this is real and easy to follow. But the techniques, I have to emphasize, they were top secret, and they should not have been, but they were.
Well, what kind of thought process did you go through before you decided to release these videotapes? I mean, it really is the end of secrets, and we're talking about this, I'm sure you heard it before the hour. Absolute truth may be very dangerous.
Well, we have a technical support site that's free to all the purchasers of the tape. That's our SciTech website. When people come in there, we answer their questions and provide tutorials for them. And I've been watching this site and interacting with the people over the last couple of weeks, and I've almost been sitting back and biting my fingernails. It's like, what have I done here? Yeah, I'm beginning to wonder, because this thing is growing much faster and more quickly than I had ever envisioned in terms of accuracy rates and the 100th monkey effect.
Yeah.
I think that very soon a threshold number of people that can that have these skills is going to be reached, and then Katie bar the door. I don't know. Even I don't know what will happen.
So it's an experiment.
It's not an experiment for me, but it's an experiment for society.
That's what I mean.
Yes.
Yeah, a grand scale experiment.
It's a social experiment. It's a step in evolution. It's something we're going to reach a critical mass here, and then there truly will not. There will be a corpus of people who will be able to do this. And once they turn their attention en masse or as individuals to any specific topics or problems, they're going to have the answer in post-haste.
As a matter of curiosity, Ed, in the general population, how many natural psychics do you think there may be?
Well, a natural psychic, when I train a person in these techniques and methods, I notice that there's about 20% of the individuals, the trainees, if my trainees represent a cross-section of society, about...
Which I doubt they do.
I don't think they do either. Many of them are professionals, but there's about 20% of them that do have a natural ability. And what I've noticed, what natural means is a very balanced person, balanced intuitively, balanced physically, balanced emotionally, and balanced intellectually. When that kind of balance is there, you get really high performances out of people right off the bat.
In the general population, though, the figure, I bet you, is much lower because naturals would gravitate toward you.
I'm not certain that's true, Art. I don't necessarily agree with that. I think that the interest level in these techniques and methods in technical remote viewing is so high. We've gotten so many thousands of people that have requested training, and they come from all walks of life, and people who were like myself, about as psychic as a rock, to individuals who do this for a living and are naturals. But that does not mean that they're consistent. They know they have the ability, but they lose the target once they turn their attention to a target, because they don't have the discipline structure that we teach on these tapes.
Well, I don't know, Ed. If I were a natural psychic, I've had one grand experience in my life, only one, but if I were a natural psychic and I were experiencing these things on and off, on and off, on and off, without control, I might be tempted to seek out somebody like yourself to find out what I've got and try to control it. And that is what you can do, isn't it?
That is essentially what we do, yes. Those kinds of things. But we attract people from all walks of life who would like to believe they're psychic, some of whom are very naturally gifted, and some who are not. And I think we do have a pretty good cross-section of society represented.
Okay, can you take somebody who is as psychic as a rock, your phrase, and train them to be as psychic as a good natural?
Yes, every time. As long as they're willing to sit down and go through the work, even if they're a skeptic, we can still do it, because it's essentially a skill. This is a skill. If you think that you, for instance, to use an analogy, if you think you will never be able to ice skate or ski,
yes.
It doesn't matter what you think. With a good coach or a teacher or teaching methods, you're still going to be able to do that in spite of yourself. And that's what we do, because this is a skill, and it's a natural type of a process that was discovered.
All right. The U.S. government stopped funding, they say, the remote viewing project. And when we come back, I want to ask you why they did that. In other words, if remote viewing is what Ed claims it to be, why would the government, in effect, give up on it? That'll be the question when we return.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from August 4th, 1997.
She's coming in for a bloody fight. Reflect the stars that guide me towards salvation. I stopped to know.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from August 4th, 1997.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Art Bell. My guest is Ed Dames, SciTech's Major Ed Dames. Within moments, possibly even by now, there will be a link on my website to the SciTech website. Module 1 of the grand secret being dispersed worldwide is already out, and we'll tell you how to get more of Module 1, Module 1, or order Module 2. I'm sure we'll get to that. We are in the relatively innocuous portion of the show right now, and I'll give you a pre-warning right now. But probably in the next segment, the next hour, we're going to begin to get into some pretty rough stuff. So if you tend to be scared by predictions of future events, then you're going to want to tune out. And I'm giving you a good 22 minutes notice to tune out. Because there are some very disturbing things that you're going to hear, because we're going to ask Ed about some things that he's talked about in the past and some new information that tends to underscore what he's said. And, Ed, you've been a guest on this program, Ed, for about how long now, on and off, for how long? How long has it been?
Yeah, I think it's been a year now.
At least a year, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Before the bottom of the hour, Ed, I meant to ask you, of course, why the military discontinued remote viewing. If it is such a tremendous asset from an intelligence point of view, why would they discontinue it, and are you convinced they have?
I'm convinced they have, and actually it's far more effective now than it was then, because most of the bugs have been worked out of it, and it's just far more consistent now than it was in the military. It took it needed to become commercial to work. I think you find the same thing in the UFO arena too. It has to be taken out of the military environment to be usable. I've been involved in a number of black programs in my military career, some of them very, very deep and dark, and others not so deep and dark, but nevertheless clandestine covert operations and projects. This project, this remote viewing project, this unit that I was a part of, training and operations officer for, I have never been involved in a unit or an operation that was held with so much, that represented so much power and was so feared. It was coveted by certain people in political positions. It made the Army Chief of Staff for Intelligence so angry he refused to talk about it. It was feared. It was the antithesis of science to the military-industrial community. It was all those things, and for all those reasons, it was a hot potato, and it became a white elephant. So those are the reasons it was dropped.
So you scared them?
We scared people so badly, there were heart attacks just watching us work in the early days.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Just observing us, because the idea, colonels watching us, just the idea that we were doing what we were doing, producing information in that manner, was so scary to some people. It represented being close to the unknown, beyond just mystery, that I think it caused them to have heart attacks.
I should tell my audience, I don't know, it was maybe a half a year ago, you sent me your military record, and I've read the entire thing. There's no question about it. Major Dames was involved in exactly what he says he was, and probably more that was not in there. But your military record absolutely verifies what you were doing, Ed. And so here's a general question. This comes from Richard in California, and he's referring to these various Air Force explanations about Roswell. And now, today, the latest, greatest from the CIA, of all people, talking about UFOs, saying in the 50s and 60s that about half the sightings could be attributed to the Blackbird, SR-71, and the U-2. And so they lied to the American public to protect these experimental black covert aircraft. Richard writes, the government could save us all an awful lot of time if they just tell us about the times that they actually told us the truth.
That can't be done that easily, Art. The reason is national security. And national security, at least these days, many times, if we are dealing with a real UFO incident, UFOs are real. They're out there. Some of them are not produced in this era by humans.
UFOs are real. That's a non-trivial statement. When you say UFOs are real, sure they are. There's unidentified flying objects. I've seen a couple myself.
But I mean that coming from either another place outside of this planet or another time, those are the ones I'm talking about.
Those
kinds. There are some out there that have been spotted, as we all know, as many of us know, and they're a horse of a different color. But if those kinds of sightings, if information about them was acquired, if technical information was acquired, the artifacts of, let's say, propulsion, microwave signatures, other types of footprints that these things have,
yes,
technologically speaking.
Yes.
The devices that the military-industrial community has are many times very classified, and their operating parameters, the parameters that collect information about these UFOs, those are very classified things. They cost a lot of money. And to be able to say that this particular species of device that you saw in the sky was not one of ours and was operating in the following modes, that would give away many of the operating parameters of our collection devices, and we don't want a potential enemy to know what we can do.
It certainly would. How long have we known that there really are others?
You know, there's not that statement anywhere. There are others. No one says others. The scientists that I have worked with, some of the best in the Skunk Works and other deep, dark projects, they're willing to accede that there is a UFO out there, uh-huh, something that a piece of equipment that does not belong to us. But they're not willing to use that word, others or people. Once SciTech was supporting a large engineering endeavor. In our early days, we were looking at the propulsion systems that was used on some of these so-called UFOs.
Can you tell us something about them?
Well, let me tell you first that the scientists that we worked with, when queried about, or when the question was posed, gee, do any of you guys wonder about who has sent this or who's inside or what the others are like? That question it was really almost irrelevant. The military-industrial community was very much interested in what made those toys work and not the who behind it. So SciTech left those guys behind, and we went on to other things.
So you concentrated on the technical aspects, propulsion systems, that sort of thing?
In those days, about 10 years ago. We do other things now.
Can you give us any sense? I don't know what you're able to talk about and what you're not, so I just have to probe, do the best I can. What can you tell us about propulsion systems?
Well, several of the devices that we looked at that were alien in nature, that were from another world, let's say. Now, some devices were from another time, future humans. I've talked about this before, sending either robot vehicles back in time or piloted vehicles passing through time. And we've talked about this before. Many of these devices are, as you might guess, robotic in nature. It's almost like they are sentient machines. And I think the best way to do this, since SciTech has abandoned a lot of our very high visibility projects, is to probably ask you and your listeners to select for SciTech those kinds of events and so-called objects, things that sometimes present themselves as objects are not. They could just be lights or plasma balls.
Uh-huh.
Present those to SciTech. Let us work that and come back to you 2 weeks later and give you our results.
All right, a classic, Ed. A mm-hmm. classic, of course, was Roswell. Now, I had as a guest on two occasions recently, I was very honored to have Colonel Philip J. Corso, who had a lot of very, very profound things to say about things he saw and did when he was in the military. And one of the things that struck me was that he said the alien bodies that were recovered virtually disintegrated very quickly, and there was not enough time, in his words, to examine them because of that. They virtually deteriorated before their eyes. And you had said about Roswell that somebody had gone back and cleaned it up and that the bodies had disappeared, and all of a sudden, boom, and he said that it clicked what you had said about Roswell.
Well, let's revisit that momentarily. It'll only take a couple of minutes. This is the SciTech stance on Roswell again. That was an orchestrated crash. It was designed to be a crash. There was a real crash with real aliens. The debris was really there on the floor, on the desert floor, as well as the bodies. But the very advanced race who orchestrated that particular drama then went back in time a number of hours after the event, and our time. They went
yes.
back in time and
yes.
and prevented the crash from happening. So there were two parallel timelines there. And when they prevented the crash from happening, all of a sudden, because it didn't happen anymore, the things, the physical artifacts, the physical debris disappeared. All the physicality of the event was gone. But because mind is outside of time, mind is really in the fifth dimension, time is a fourth dimension, mind is outside of space and time, the memory of the event was still in the minds of the people who touched the bodies, who touched the debris, loaded it onto trucks, drove the trucks to different places. But there was a lot of confusion all of a sudden because those things vaporized. They were no longer there. There's no physical evidence of that crash at all, and yet it was real. So these people will go to their graves, many of them already have, believing that they really touched that and that there really was a crash. And in fact, there was. But there's no physical evidence.
Absolutely fascinating.
Time travel. 500 years ago, the Earth was flat. Let's not forget that.
Yes, it was.
Time travel is not that big a deal for advanced races out there. It isn't. And so we see this as a big conundrum. And 50 years after Roswell, which is one-tenth of the time from when the world was flat, come to think of it, it's still a conundrum. It's still a mystery to us all.
During your military...
Unless you're a remote viewer.
Okay. During your military time, your remote viewers, the people you worked with, you were their training officer, targeting officer, is that correct?
That's correct.
These people occasionally bumped into things while you were targeting obvious military targets, intelligence targets of various sorts, hardware, enemies of the U.S., whatever. They would encounter other things, wouldn't they? Things that you didn't want them encountering.
One of the most common things was glowing objects. As you might guess, a lot of our targets were, let's say, foreign submarines. submarine,
okay.
The boomers.
Sure.
Soviet boomers represented a big threat to this country.
Sure.
As you might imagine. So when operations research and systems analysis techniques or Monte Carlo theory or game theory could not pinpoint where a Soviet submarine was, and we needed to be able to do that to take them out using a nuclear weapon if we were go to war. At that time it wasn't technical remote viewing. Coordinate remote viewing was used to try to get a lock on these Soviet submarines. And what we were encountering in some of these instances were glowing objects, were photographs taken from satellites, of glowing objects above the water or above an actual boomer, Soviet sub. And these were, in fact, manned devices, and they were tallying the number of warheads and actually the location of all the nuclear warheads in the world.
Wow.
Point by point by point. We had to investigate what they were doing. And they were humans, but the humans were from about a number of decades ahead, moving back in time. Now, I know that's very difficult to believe. The kinds of methods that we use today are pretty precision. I had to tell a woman the other day that her husband was dead. Now, think about that. A disappearance, prominent person. Our techniques are good enough to be able to say with 100% likelihood that a person is dead, and to tell a grieving wife that. That's the same type of precision we use against Enigma. But Enigma are a lot more fun.
How, Ed, do you discern that an individual is no longer with us, beating heart, brain, all the rest of it? How do you discern that?
That's taught in the structure, and I don't want to get too technical. There's a number of things you have to learn about this structure and the way that we perceive individuals dead or alive, and it really has to be taught, Art. It's a taught skill, and I wouldn't be able to provide you with any context in a conversation about how we discern that. It's the way that we sketch the individual and the perceptions that we get from the individual, or the lack of perceptions that we get in terms of their emotions or lack of emotions. But that's just one aspect. We have a lot. It's a self-correcting process, technical remote viewing. We have a lot of double checks and cross checks built into the system.
Huh.
And this is all taught.
So, in other words, you would not sense their being, you would not sense any emotions, you would not sense any activity, you'd sense a flat line, nothing would be there.
If we're looking at the present location of a person and that person has already died, that's correct.
Whew, that's really eerie. That must be one of the more difficult, unpleasant parts of remote viewing. Remote viewing is not all pleasant by any means, is it?
I think it is very exciting, but those kinds of cases will cause many people to actually begin to cry. And they have to break away from their remote viewing session for a number of minutes and come back and restart. It's very similar. You're not really there. It's not like being there. You're picking up a person the way they exist as a pattern of information. So it's not really like being next to the person in an out-of-body experience.
Right.
It's very much like watching a documentary. Let's say a documentary about Waco, something like that.
Okay, we've talked in the past about out-of-body experiences, and the plane that people travel in when they're out-of-body, is that the same plane that remote viewers use?
Negative. Absolutely not.
No.
That's a very, very different phenomenon. So one of the things that I had to do with our, and this is discussed in module two of our tapes, things I had to do with the National Security Council and others, is to place remote viewing in its proper place, as opposed to all of the other different types of phenomena that belong either in the occult or in the realm of the paranormal, mm-hmm. and say, this is a different animal. Don't put us in with these other things. Channeling, out of bodies, altered states, deja vu.
Completely different discipline.
Very, very, it is a skill.
All right, Ed, hang tight. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from August 4th, 1997. You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from August 4th, 1997.
What you're listening to, you can't get yet. This is Cusco from Apurimac 3, returned to Native America. And it is absolutely incredible. Anyway, top of the morning, my guest is Ed Dames, Psytex Ed Dames, and I'm now going to issue my warning. Some of the material that you're going to hear in the coming hour or hours is going to be very disturbing, and it will disturb a lot of people. There's no question about it. It always does. If it disturbs you, tune out. If you have children listening, tune out. And I sincerely mean that. There's no need for anybody to experience something that will disturb them. And there are many people who, frankly, are better off not knowing what is to come or what may be coming. It is the nature of that sort of material that lays directly ahead with Major Ed Dames. So, stay right there and we'll get to it. There are many reasons you should be going to my website right now. One is you can jump over to the SciTech website, Ed Dames' website, and take a look and learn more about remote viewing. Another is a show we're going to have coming Wednesday regarding remarks made by one Cal Korf. You can hear those in real audio on the site. Another is there are new crop circles. The most remarkable, incredible, complicated, precise crop circles you've ever seen. And we have on our website exclusive distribution rights in the U.S. to the connectors' photographs. So you go take a look at the new ones. They're absolutely staggering. And while you're up there, don't forget to jump over to the Rogue Market and do a little commodity trading. It's free and it's fun. It's a game, or it's not a game. You will find commodities listed, like talk radio hosts, for example. That's how we found out about it. All right, again, some of what you're about to hear is going to be disturbing. There's no other way to put it. Once again, here is SciTex Major Ed Dames. Ed, welcome back.
Thanks. You want me to put my Dr. Doom hat on now?
Dr. Doom hat, yeah. But before we do that, I guess, let's slide into it slowly. Have you ever remote viewed good old Area 51?
No. No, I haven't. And if there's a specific facility or the way to really do this precisely for soon, I think by December, enough people will be skilled to be able to really put together accurate pictures of
what's up there.
Of what's there. But the way to do it is to grab a photo, a long shot, any shot whatsoever, and circle the particular facility or structure that you're interested in rather than attempting to get a generic description of the whole area.
Right.
Look at that facility, or take another photo and circle a moving object that's still framed and use that as a technical remote viewing target. That way you have chain of custody. You know specifically what your data is associated with, rather than attempting to look at everything at once and not knowing which structure your descriptions are connected with.
Mm-hmm.
That's the best way to do that.
All right.
And if you would like for SciTech to do that without violating national security, we can do that for you and your listeners.
Well, why don't you go ahead and put that one on your list? I think a lot of people would like to know.
You have to.
But again, you know what, Ed? I'm actually a believer in national security, and I know damn well we've got a lot of things going on up there that are deep black projects, and we have a right to that. So, you know, that actually, in a lot of ways, provokes another question. I mean, you're turning loose something that is going to allow a lot of people, including Ed, our enemies, to look at us and look at Area 51 or other secure areas. How about that aspect of it? Of course, I guess they've had their own projects going for some time, so I guess you're not really giving it away, are you?
No, the projects have not been as effective as SciTech technical remote viewing, but there won't be that many things that could be hidden that well, things of a catastrophic nature. I'm afraid that we really are facing the inevitability of more biological weapon attacks or possibly a nuclear weapon. And if this kind of skill is in the hands of many people, particularly our intelligence services, many of my trainees have been intelligence officers, then we're going to know where and what is going on in terms of somebody putting together a weapon of mass destruction, whether it's Supreme Mountain Truth or what.
Interesting you should bring that subject up. There's a substantial amount of rumor and some fact, apparently, behind what we've heard about what used to be the Soviet Union and several tactical nuclear weapons or nuclear weapons of some sort being either sold or stolen and coming into the hands of Iran or Iraq or some one of those nations. Do you know anything at all about that?
They got something better than the weapons themselves. They got the displaced Soviet nuclear engineers.
Yeah, that's true.
Mm-hmm. About 300 of them.
300?
All displaced.
300?
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Some went south, some went east, but they, guess what they do for a living now? But they don't do it at home. They're in warmer climes now.
Great.
It's a big problem.
Ed, James Randi. James Randi. Let's cover James Randi, because James Randi claims to have now well over $1 million in a fund to anybody who can prove the kind of thing that you do. And James Randi, I talked to James. I had two or three opportunities to speak with him. You said, I believe, that you contacted his organization to take up his challenge. Where is all that now?
It's nowhere. We want to do it on neutral turf. We don't want to do it on Randy's turf or on SciTech turf. We want a neutral party to do this. And we're willing to do that at any time. In fact, you know, I essentially, as much as informed Mr. Randi, write down on a piece of paper the name of the target, a person, a place, a thing, or an event, and that piece of paper goes into a folder somewhere, and we will describe that particular target and get it right and relieve you of your $1 million.
Yeah, it'd be an easy million. Right?
But I think that that organization, august as it is pretty much aware of our hit rates, and that may scare them a little bit.
Well, I will say this. A lot of the audience will not recall or wasn't part of the show then. I talked to James Randi about that, and his response to me by email was, that he would write down a series of numbers and place them in his safe, and that you should relate to me those numbers. And I thought that a rather uncontrolled experiment. His safe didn't sound right to me. So I wrote back and I said, look, how about coming on the program and in public agreeing to the conditions of a test, to which he responded he would not do that, because at that point he had been offered a CNN series along with myself, with the possibility of one. He felt that would spoil or dilute the possibility of that, and he just flat refused to come on the air, and to this day refuses to come on the air with you to set up the conditions of a test. So I thought we'd relate this and throw out the challenge once again, James. There it is. All you've got to do is come on a short amount of time along with Ed, and we will set up the conditions for a test, and Ed will have $1 million.
That would be a lot of fun for us, and it would be as well as lucrative. But one thing I must mention is, with regard to numbers, we can, technical remote viewing cannot discern numbers. It's one of our limitations, nor can we discern the spoken word. We can extract all the ideas that are associated with a person talking, but we cannot discern the words themselves.
All right, let's say he did this then. I'm fishing here, but say he took a picture of the Eiffel Tower and put it in a safe with a third party that you both agreed to. Would that be the
best? That's perfect. That's what we do. In fact, we teach our beginning students to do that kind of thing in the tapes. So it's pretty easy for us to do that.
Well, it seems to me that would meet the criterion that he has established for the taking of the million plus. So, Randy, if you're out there you go, bud. The gauntlet is down. It's up to you. And so there it is. Listen, there are a lot of things going on in the world right now, Ed, that are very, very worrisome. As you point out, some of the other remote viewers have called you in the past Dr. Doom. How did you get that title?
I actually got the title, that appellation, before I was training officer in the remote viewing unit. I was a targeting officer at very high levels of intelligence at the Office of Secretary of Defense, where I selected particular targets and engineered intelligence collections operations against them. I used the nascent remote viewing program to help break the back of the Soviet biochemical warfare program. We used it to get clues or cues to cross-cue other intelligence systems to be able to discern what facilities were actually producing specific toxic agents, those kinds of things.
Hmm.
So when I walked into the old executive office building and in the White House to brief, I brought those kinds of results with me, and as they were very unsavory all the time. I wasn't just talking about megatonnage and throw weights of missiles and MIRVs.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking about the various ways that you can kill a person using biological warfare. I was a biological warfare officer. And those were really, really unsavory. And some of the staff officers in the White House were very squeamish, and they gave me that name, Dr. Doom.
Dr. Doom. And here I thought it was the civilian work you've done and that work you've done on my program that got you that, but not so, huh?
No.
All right. I could sit here and tick off the present environmental problems that we have that are beginning to mount in an incredible way. I mean, in the Antarctic, we have simple-celled microorganisms now beginning to show genetic changes, really incredibly dangerous because of the ultraviolet. We have children in Australia required to wear hats every single day. We have a new little organism off the East Coast, which began in the estuaries of North Carolina, called Fusteria, which has now spread to the oceans, and literally millions and millions of fish, and this is not an exaggeration, crabs, other sea creatures are showing these lesions, bleeding, open sores. It's spreading up and down the East Coast. It's real. Right now, the officials in North Carolina and elsewhere don't want to talk about it, of course, because it would affect tourism. But we have had good scientific proof that this is going on. Frogs with as many as 11 legs from here to Japan to Canada. On and on and on and on, the ice caps are beginning to melt and crack. Things are going on. There's absolutely no question about it, Ed. Where is this going?
It's ecocide, Art, and you don't need technical remote viewing any longer to predict what's going to happen. It's easy to discern using the science and the reports that are out there. The biosphere is collapsing. It's very predictable without remote viewing. What you need remote viewing for is to survive. Indicators and warning, it's too late for that. We already have the indicators and warning.
A year ago, you told me this was coming, and you told me the various signs were coming, and sure as hell, they're here now.
By this time next year, we will be in the midst of a global economic collapse that will be facilitated by just this type of thing, by weather and disease, and I stand by that.
All right. On a previous program, you mentioned that there was something that came from Comet Hale-Bopp that was a cylinder, I believe a cylinder or a cylindrical object, that...
We call it an artificial component that detached. Uh-huh.
That detached and was headed toward Earth. Can you tell us any... And that had in it a plant pathogen.
It has something that is either a plant pathogen... it looks like it's organic. It's either a carrier, an inducer, or a producer, or a facilitator for what will become a plant pathogen. Hmm. We are tracking its position, and it's about 5 to 7 months out. It detached from the comet as a package, a special delivery package, if you will, and it is en route now, and we're keeping tabs on it.
So you also said it would probably begin to affect Africa first.
We think it will actually come in the Earth's atmosphere over Africa first.
Over Africa. Mm-hmm. So you stand by all of that.
That's correct.
And that will then begin to kill plant life, green plant life. Is that correct? Eventually spreading worldwide?
We're not sure. It looks like it's the consequences are pretty serious, but we're not sure if it's the ozone degradation
uh-huh.
or the plant pathogen or a combination of both that does such widespread damage.
However, the effects, the damage, that's not a question. You're sure of that?
Yes, we're sure of that. As incredible as that seems, but what can you say? We double checked and triple checked our work, and we stand by it.
All right. We'll be right back, Ed. Stay right where you are. Ed Dames is my guest. I'm Art Bell.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from August 4th, 1997.
For a soul to steal, he was in a bind, but he was way behind. He was willing to make a deal. When he came across this young man sewing on a fiddle and playing it hot, and the devil jumped up on a hickory stump and said, "Boy, let me tell you what. I guess you didn't know it, but I'm a fiddle player too. And if you care to take it..."
Premier Radio Networks presents Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight's program originally aired August 4th, 1997.
Good morning. My guest is Major Ed Dames, SciTech's Ed Dames. Again, I warn you, this is disturbing material. There's no question about it. If it disturbs you, tune out. If there are children in the room, tune out or get them out of the room. One. Back to Ed in a moment. Here's a fact from Daryl, and I agree. Art, I always listen very carefully to this man. I, too, have reviewed his credentials carefully, and indeed they and he are impressive. In my opinion, he is a professional all the way. He is and always will be a member of the intelligence community. I say this with admiration and respect. I further believe what he does say about any classified subjects are things that he is permitted to say. He is not telling tales out of school. He knows what the consequences are for himself and those he cares about if he does not. He is also loyal. Therefore, what he says and does not say is extremely revealing. This is why I listen very carefully to him for content and attended emotional expression, and that is why I have appreciated transcripts of these interviews that you have provided in the past. Ed Dames is a no-nonsense kind of guy. If anyone doubts this, I suggest they look at his history. He is the genuine article. That's Daryl in Los Angeles. And I agree with that, Ed. You know, a lot of people twist or mishear what you say and will send me faxes later. That's a big problem. No matter how carefully you say something, they take it out of context and come raging back at you, shouting fraud or something, because they didn't quite hear what you said correctly.
And the vultures are always hovering.
Always hovering. There's no doubt about it. Ed, any idea, just turning on subjects for a moment, we'll come back to your doom hat. There was a big occurrence in March in Phoenix, Arizona. This has been the subject of much consternation and talk for a long time now. The lights over Phoenix, or whatever the hell it was over Phoenix. Is this something you could turn your attention to, or do you know anything at all about it?
Piece of cake.
Really?
There's probably a photograph on your website, and we could use that and target that. Would you like us to do that?
I would like that a lot.
Okay, so we're going to take a specific photo of this event, and we're going to take a look at that.
All right.
What
can you tell us about earth-changing events? Mazarat this morning is predicted to be in full eruption shortly. They're talking debris is raining down on residents of the town of Salem in Mazarat. It's very serious, and it looks like a full-blown eruption is coming. They're preparing to evacuate the entire island. Now, Mazarat is but one. What's coming earth change-wise? What do you see?
Art, I think we've covered this pretty much in previous shows. Nothing comes even close to the collapse of the ozone layer. Nothing in terms of its consequences to life on the planet.
All right. Everybody's going to want to know then if that is the big one, and it is. And I know that SciTech actually at some point stopped work on nearly every other project you were doing for a long, long time and went to work on this, didn't you?
Yes, we did.
Are you yet able to see past it, to know, I mean, you've talked of men actually having to go underground, live underground. Come out at night only, growing crops in a new and special way,
mm-hmm.
and so forth and so on. Can you yet see past this time to when a new dawn arrives?
We can. In fact, we're dealing with that in Project Starman. And other than Starman and our technical support teaching the public these skills, we have dropped almost all of our other projects except for spot reports on this artificial component that detached from Hale Bopp. That's why I just said that frees us up to look at these kinds of things like the March event in Phoenix.
Project Starman, let me see how far I can push you on that one. We talked about it earlier, and you said this is something I really can't talk about. How much?
Starman is SciTech's capstone project. All that we have done in the past since 1989, when I founded the company, has really very much led in two directions, to educating the public, to providing the public with the same tools that we use, that I use.
Right.
And Project Starman. Project Starman involves contact with another race. And it was this has been a proprietary project for a long time, and I've decided to talk about it tonight. And even some of my employees have not heard what I'm going to say tonight. So it's going to be new information, and it's extremely interesting.
Well, tell us as much as you can.
Well,
when did it begin?
It really began in about 1992, when I realized that we could use technical remote viewing to discern the methods and devices that would be required to attract another race and to initiate contact, perhaps. And so we began to use our tools to investigate this. Well, let me back up for a moment. This began as what we call a topical search. All ideas and things exist as a pattern of information in the collective unconscious. And this collective unconscious is fed or exists as a field that surrounds all humanoid life, not just us here on Earth.
Mm.
And so we're able to go into that and look to see, and to make a long story short, we can discern what other races use to communicate amongst themselves and how contact is initiated from race to race. And that's what we did in Starman. I'm going to talk about that specifically.
Did you see the movie Contact?
I did. I thought it was superb. And,
so did I.
And I liked it very much. Jodie Foster's performance was outstanding. There's a couple of errors in that movie. Some very, very interesting errors. Carl Sagan, to whom the movie was dedicated, just one of the last papers that he co-authored before his death was a paper called Scintillation-Induced Intermittency in SETI. And I'd like to talk about that paper.
Explain the term first.
I will. The problem that is inherent in that movie is inherent in the SETI program. The SETI program is now actually stupid. It's a stupid thing to do. Radio waves are not the way that to affect communication from star to star.
They travel at just below the speed of light, right?
It's not just that, but they're subject to scintillation, to fading. You're a ham radio operator, so you're patently familiar with the effect.
Sure.
That microwave radiation fades in and out. And Carl Sagan, when he co-authored this paper, he realized that this is a great problem, that you could have a signal that's here one moment and gone the next, and never realize that might be a steady extraterrestrial intelligence signal.
Interesting you should mention that, because I believe, Ed, that it is absolutely correct that SETI has detected, I don't know, two or three dozen signals at various times that it thought might have been of a not natural origin, but they were unable to hold on to them, and that's fact.
Yes, but a very advanced race will probably not use microwave radiation to communicate for technical reasons that I won't go into tonight. But suffice it to say that the way we arrived at the right way to do it was via technical remote viewing. We actually looked at what would be the proper beacon or signal to gain contact, and that was a laser. There's an aspect of the SETI program that looks at the visual spectrum.
Sure.
It's called OSETI, optical SETI.
Sure.
And it's a bastard child of the SETI program. SETI is a big, has a vested interest and is almost wedded to the idea of radio signals. And that's not the way to transmit lots of information across intergalactic distances.
Well, I think they have been pretty well stuck in the 2 gigahertz to 4 gigahertz range. Generally, it's thought around 2100, 2.1 gigs, somewhere in there, I forget, where they thought it would be the most logical frequency that could be heard from another distant galaxy or whatever, planet.
But it's not logical at all, and we're going to have to get smarter in order to have contact. because who wants to communicate with a race that's dumb? And the SETI program, the way it is exists now, if it keeps on looking in the radio band, that's a dumb thing to do. So essentially, what we did in SciTech was to look over the years at what was being used as beacons out there. And
right.
What's being used are lasers.
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 Optical laser.
If you pulse a laser, you're getting something that flashes brighter than the very star system that it comes from in many ways. And that can be seen. It can be detected particularly easy by instruments because you don't have the scintillation problem. It's a straight shot line of sight.
Do we want contact? That's a very good question. The beings that you're talking about now that we would contact would be probably a very good possibility. They would be very much advanced beyond us. And in the movie Contact, I believe if you had one question you could ask another race, what would it be? And I think that Jodie Foster's answer was how they managed to make it past the self-destructive phase that we are in right now.
I think a good question to ask would be, who are we? That would be a good question also. Arthur C. Clarke, by the way, is really a firm believer that we're in using lasers to communicate, and that is probably the way that advanced races, at least in the intermediate stages of evolution, are communicating. There are ways to bypass space-time, but let's stick with the laser idea right here. What SciTech is doing is something very revolutionary. We are building a facility. We're actually going to transmit a signal, a laser signal.
Wow, really?
Yes, we're doing that. And we know where to point the laser, and we know who we're pointing it at. And it is not in another star system.
Wow.
Yes. So that's what we're doing in-house.
It's not another star system.
No. It's another planet. So it takes a very, very minimal amount of power to do that. But it's a way to attract attention. And it's a way to convince another race that we've finally figured it out, that we know they're there, and we know how to communicate effectively with them. So this signal beacon is what we're building.
And so
it's the most exciting thing that I've ever dealt with, except for technical remote viewing.
You're saying that there is life in our system.
There is, let's call it a transient race, not indigenous to that particular planet.
Nevertheless, present there.
That's correct. Humanoid.
When do you expect to complete construction of this facility?
The end of next year. And it won't be in Beverly Hills.
You have told us in the past that you plan to leave Beverly Hills. And I take it you're referring to that trip?
Polynesia.
Polynesia, aha, finally he pins it down for us a little bit. Polynesia, huh? Well, now I want to go.
We start transitioning into that site, that operational site, in the spring. Actually.
All right, let me cut through it all here. You have released Module 1 of the Technical Remote Viewing Modules, the tapes.
And we're FedExing that, by the way.
FedExing, and I take it you've moved to FedExing. Were you using UPS?
Yes, we were until this morning.
Until this morning, yeah. Is this a way for you to finance your move, your project, everything that's coming ahead for you? I mean, is that one of the motivations in the release of this tape? Is that fair to ask?
It's not the motivation. But it is being used to finance that site, yes. We'd rather do that than we have a lot of people who want to be patron saints and want to support us financially, but we've decided to go it on our own to maintain control. The last time I was involved in a SETI-type program,
yes.
It was a proprietary contract, and I was not allowed to talk about it, and I never want that to happen again. I might as well be back in the intelligence community.
Let me ask this, Ed. Why do we want contact?
I'm doing it It was a decision that I made, Art. It was a private citizen who made a decision, and that's why I don't know what else to say about it.
Well, I understand that you've made that decision. What I'm asking is what led you to that decision? In other words, why do we want to communicate with others?
As far as I'm concerned, my end game, although this is my capstone project, my end game is membership for our children into this federation. There's lots of folks out there, and we're sort of alone, and there's no need to be anymore. We just need to get smarter and gain entry into this federation that does exist.
You know, once again, referring to that movie, because it struck me so profoundly, they said it again and again, there's so much space out there, so many planets, so many suns, more than we can count. If we are alone, what a waste of space. So I really don't think we are alone. It's only a matter of how we initiate contact. And you think you've got the key.
We used the tool that was developed by your tax dollars to, instead of looking at foreign weapons programs like we used to do, we looked at this. And that was my decision, and I'm very happy with that decision. And it involves a laser. Piggybacked off of a telescope, I might add.
Technical remote viewing is what told you where you were going to try to initiate contact?
It gave us the means, the modulation, and the intensity and the wavelength. It gave us the description of whom we would be communicating with or shining this beacon at, throwing the signal at, and where they are. It gave us all of that.
Indeed, lasers may be modulated in nearly any way. Frequency-wise, there are all kinds of technical specifications regarding a pulse laser. There's no question about that. And all of that was discerned by TRV.
Yes. So it's essentially the same kinds of things we did, except this time we turned our attention towards contact. Pretty exciting, I think. It's the most exciting thing that I've ever been involved in.
It's very exciting. How many people will be involved with you in the project in Polynesia? Can you say that?
Probably less than 12 on site.
God, what an exciting project.
Yes, I think so. It's an understatement.
Are there dangers inherent in what you're trying to do? In other words, can you be certain, has TRV told you that anything about these beings, anything about them at all that would make you feel comfortable in that contact, or will there be some unsure part of it?
We know two things. We know that they have robots. For all intents and purposes, robots and robot vehicles, and we know that they are angry.
Oh. Angry?
Yes. They are the ones that I have talked about before that will be here with us after the stuff hits the fan and the air clears. Another race will be here. This is the self-same race.
So they know what's happening to us.
That's correct. And this is their... This is going to be a home that they will live in also, and they're watching us destroy or help destroy this home.
One of the things, the most remarkable things I've ever seen in my whole life, Ed, are the crop circle formations that we're beginning to get this year. They are just absolutely astounding. And I don't know if you've done any work with them or they have any meaning or relationship to what we're talking about right now, but when we come back, I want to ask you about them. And so we shall do that. And, yes, we will get the phone lines open. My guest is SciTech's Major Ed Dames. I'm Art Bell, and the warning continues. Disturbing, interesting, fascinating information. If it bothers you, tune out. If not, stand by, because we'll be right back.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from August 4th, 1997.
Skies are blue, and clouds in white, the bright blessed day.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from August 4th, 1997.
Is it all true? What do you think? Listening to the incredible. Do you buy what Ed says? You think it could be true? Do you believe remote viewing is so? A real discipline that really works? Well, keep listening.
I see friends shaking hands, saying, how do you do? They're really saying, I love you. I hear babies cry. I watch them grow. They're like much more than I've ever known.
Because we really don't know it all, do we? We'll get back to Ed Ames in a moment, and yes, phones coming up. Probably we will begin calls at the bottom of the hour. I want to ask Ed, though, about crop circles. Ed, I don't know if it's anything that you have investigated, but each year the crop circles are becoming more in their number and more complicated in their construction. They're absolutely remarkable, as a matter of fact, and I wonder if you have anything to offer with regard to what they might be.
How could we not have looked at that?
Yeah, that's what I thought.
They're time registration stamps.
Time registration stamps.
If you're interested, if you possess the ability, a capability to move in time, and you're interested in returning to the same point in time again and again, or to directing someone else there,
uh-huh.
If you're traveling in time, you need an apparatus to measure where you are in a general way. And one of the ways that other races do that, and that we will do in the future, is to lock on to extragalactic or intergalactic time standards, very large pulsars or quasars, whose signals are predictably changing or degrading over millennia or eons of time. So you know when you come to a stop, generally where you are.
A pulsar, for example, would be a wonderful time standard.
Mm-hmm.
No question about it.
A pulsar or a quasar.
Yeah.
But you need to know where you are locally. That's good enough to get you within a ballpark of, maybe 20 or 30 years.
Uh-huh.
Okay?
Right.
Nominally. But you don't know what day it is. And so a really good way to know what day it is to take a little tool about a half a meter in diameter that looks like a blue sphere to us,
uh-huh.
And to send down there, and in a way that technically if we'd like to get into it, we could talk about, have it create a very unique mark in purposeful, and embed that mark in short-lived perishable medium. A fresh crop circle on that particular day and time is registered to that day. The geometry and the location of the crop circle is registered in a central registry, so that others or yourself that go back in time and want to find a specific day, look for the crop circle that was registered on that day in that area. So
huh.
You know where you are along a z-axis, along the fourth dimensional axis.
All right. If that is the case, what is suggested by the fact that there are now more and more of them?
The marks are made in sort of geographic belts which serve as benchmark regions for essentially global cultural change. And the reason you're seeing more of them is because something there's, in terms of a trajectory, let's look at cultural trajectories,
uh-huh.
The velocity of change in a culture. The velocity is picking up at this point. Our culture is changing more rapidly.
Quickening.
Well, I guess we could say that. Why? If it walks like a duck, et cetera.
Yeah.
And so you're going to have many more visitors, so to speak, in this era than before, because it's very interesting times. So things moving from the future back and from the past to the future, needing to know where they are so they don't overshoot this particular era.
I think I've got it. Here's the facts. Dear Art, CIA announces that one half of the UFOs reported in the 50s and 60s were really U-2s or Blackbird spy planes. Their report stated these planes operated heights of 10 to 15 miles. Apparently, CIA agents are aliens that can see better than any human. No human can detect aircraft the size of these types or spy planes at 10 miles altitude, let alone 15. The fingers they're pointing, they're putting in the collapsing dam of secrecy are a special sign language for them with comments such as these. They are pulling the secrecy dam down themselves, and perhaps this is the real story. Do you believe they're doing that, Ed? In other words, how much do you think they know?
Well, just on a factual note, we know that you can see, obviously, an aircraft at 10 or 15 miles high. The sun's shining off of it, and or it's cold up there, and it's producing a contrail. So what they're doing now, I think they're just under a lot of pressure from a lot of political types to come up, you know, with some answers. But you're not going to be able to get contemporary intelligence, because the intelligence that's gleaned that might register a real UFO, not from around here, is gleaned from devices that are very secret.
Mm.
I've said this before. So it's just not going to happen.
Here's a UPI story you might be interested in. Just cleared. Ground has just been broken for a $1.2 billion facility that is going to house the world's largest laser. The 192-beam laser is going to be built at the Department of Energy's Lawrence Livermore National Labs in Northern California. The National Ignition Facility is a centerpiece of the Stockpile Stewardship and Management Program to maintain the U.S. nuclear arsenal without nuclear testing. So we're building a gigantic laser. Any idea what we might be doing with that?
That's to simulate and to design improved nuclear weapons. That has nothing to do with firing into space. It's firing in on itself.
All right, so not related.
Not to SETI, no.
Okay. Somebody with a question, can or will you, Ed, tell us who and or what is initiating this Earth, quote, clean up or clean out process, end quote, as per the cylinder, and for what reasons?
I don't have that information, Art. We really haven't focused upon it, and I guess we'll leave that for others to do.
Okay. Speaking of that, I really do need to give you an opportunity. There are two things I want to say. One, for those, there are still some out there who have ordered Module 1 of your TRV tapes and have not received them. So for those people, and for people who would like to order Module 1, and I presume you can still order Module 1, correct?
That's correct.
Why don't you give us a number or a contact or something or another so people can inquire? How do they do that, Ed?
For people who have not received the tape that they ordered and paid for, and there are a few of those out there,
right,
then they should call our headquarters at area code 310-657-9829.
And all they've got to do is produce the
that's correct.
The proof of purchase.
Mm-hmm. And for people who wish to purchase Module 1, do you want that 800 number?
Yeah. How long? Let me ask you this, Ed. From the time somebody now orders, it's fair to ask because of the difficulty in the past. When, let's say I order today, when will I anticipate getting the tape?
It was 5 business days as of yesterday, but now that FedEx has picked up our orders and they're, of course, weighted down by picking up UPS
yeah, I know.
Problems, I'm not actually sure. All I know is that it was five business days until this morning. Now FedEx has our orders. We pay more for that. And that's all I can tell you. So we're probably looking at maybe a week to a week and a half at this juncture.
All right. 1-800.
556. 0391.
0391. And all you can get right now to be shipped immediately is Module 1. Module 2 is coming, you said, in September.
I don't want people really to have Module 2 in their hands until they master Module 1. The basic skills need to be mastered first until you move on to the real meat. And the basic skills are fun, they're exciting, and then the tape itself is very, very informative. It's an adventure. But you need to master those basic skills and do the work before you have two in your hands.
And you're really not still positive, are you, the net effect of having this many people with that kind of ability?
I'm watching some interesting things happen in people that are in our web, on our website and in our chat rooms. They're forming groups of their own and beginning to look at certain classes of targets, even in the beginning stages. And I'm wondering where this is going in the future. But it's going to be quite a powerful thing. I know that.
Well, I can tell you this, and again, I'll tell the audience, I have Ed's Module 1, and it is one of the best produced tapes I've ever seen. The production values in it are absolutely superb. They really are, folks, superb. Now, that's from me. Ed, a lot of people say, well, he's blowing out TRV, and he's going to take the money and run to the Pacific somewhere, which actually is exactly what you're going to do, right?
Well, it cost a lot of money to produce that tape, as you might guess, Art.
I'm sure. I'm sure. In other words, you're just being straight with people. People make that charge, and I don't see what's wrong with it. In other words, you're financing this project. You're leaving for a very specific reason. You've told us all why you're leaving, where you're going, and now even what you're going to be doing. So I see no, nothing at all in the world wrong with what you're doing. And I guess that would answer people who say you're going to take the money and run. So what? That's, I guess, what the whole idea is here. And to allow people to have this, what is it, Ed? Is it it's a talent, or it's an ability, or it's a discipline?
I call it an ability. It's a talent. You're born with the potential, but it is an ability. And SciTech's not going anywhere now that we're always in cyberspace. My vice president and employees right now are in one of our chat rooms or two of our chat rooms providing technical support as we speak to people who have purchased Module 1. And that's the way it will always be. I'm in that site at least twice a day answering very technical questions, and all those answers are up on bulletin boards. So
and you can be in that site from Polynesia or Australia or anywhere else you want to choose, I suppose.
That's correct, and we know that.
When would you expect matters with respect to the ozone changes? That seems to be the main focus. When would you expect matters to begin to get seriously dicey?
1999.
In other words, the beginning of real social, agricultural disruption.
That's not just the beginning. We're into it in 99. The beginning is generally late 98 in a number of different countries, particularly the lesser developed nations, particularly Africa. There's a couple of topical searches that I want to talk about also along the Father Malachi Martin territory.
Yes.
And but those are a little bit heavy duty, and I want to tell you what I mean by a topical search. When we as technical remote viewers search the collective unconscious, it's very similar to a library search or an internet search. We're going for a book. We need a name of a target name.
Right.
Names are concepts that are reflective of ideas. Ideas have a reality all their own. And think of those ideas as the name of a book. You have to know how to use the library in a very methodical, systematic way is the way we use it in technical remote viewing.
All right, well, a good example is, a lot of people that aren't on the Internet won't know, the Chicago Sun-Times on Sunday wrote a big article about me, and I wanted to find it. So I went to a search engine called Yahoo, and I entered Chicago Sun-Times. It then returned to me about 20 hits in order of percentage of likely agreement with what I was asking. And, of course, I immediately found the Chicago Sun-Times. But that's how it works on the Internet. You're saying that's how TRV works in a way.
Correct. So if I were to, suppose I were to choose you as a target, Art Bell. If that were merely what I went into with as a search term, I would not know where I was in time. I would have you at some point in time and be downloading information, probably in present time.
Uh-huh.
If I qualified that search with present time or present location, that's where I would be, downloading information about your present location. If I qualified it with Art Bell and I looked at the most significant event in your life, that's where I would be.
Or could you look at Art Bell 1999
no.
or 2000?
No.
No?
No, because calendrical time has no meaning in the collective unconscious. Think of time as the fourth dimension. Mind, where we operate from, is in the fifth dimension.
Okay, I've got you. Could you then look at a period of time where there was a benchmark event, let's say in the coming problems we're going to have with the ozone, and look at a benchmark point and then reference Art Bell?
Yes. What we do is, if we're looking in the past, we bracket our target with benchmark events. If we're looking into the future, we download milestones, very key events, and so we know when we hit that milestone, what the next milestone will be.
I think I've got it. All right. Then let us touch on matters relating to Father Malachi Martin when we come back, and we will be back shortly, and then we will go to the phones.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from August 4th, 1997.
If I was walking in your shoes, I wouldn't worry about while you and your friends are worried about me, I'm having lots of fun.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from August 4th, 1997.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Art Bell. My guest tonight is Ed Dames, Major Ed Dames of SciTech. Remote viewing. If you don't know what remote viewing is, stay tuned, and we'll try and roll over the basics if we get an opportunity once again. I'm presuming most of you out there generally know what we're talking about or have a pretty good hint. In a moment, I've got kind of a surprise coming up for Ed, so stay tuned. My guest is Ed Dames, and he is not expecting the following. I just got this fax minutes ago. Let's see, when did it clear? 1:19, I guess it cleared my machine. Dear Art, we are SciTech graduates who completed training under Ed Dames in January of this year. There is no question that Ed is scrupulously honest, sincere, and very caring. Remote viewing works and is important to the next generation's well-being. We've been out of communication with Ed for too long due to the quickening. Please tell him that he will soon receive an explanation by fax on his line. Unfortunately, we were unaware of Ed being your guest tonight, so we were at the movie Contact. Oh, you saw Contact, too, and I agree it is excellent. We will be ordering a tape of tonight's program. And this is from Richard and Charles, and I will not give their last names, but they can if they want to. I think they're on the phone. Richard and Charles, are you there?
Yes, yes.
All right. I've never done this before. You two graduated from SciTech?
We did indeed in January, the end of January.
Well, you're a rare breed. Not too many people have actually gone through the course, you know, physically gone through the course. So
it was a privilege to meet Ed and to train under him.
So this fax then is accurate. In other words, you've gone through the whole thing. It's real.
It's very real. And I did also view the Hale-Bopp companion or the tube coming off of Hale-Bopp, and it's coming down in Africa in the spring of next year.
Ed, you're on the line with him now. These are two of your graduates.
Richard, it's good to hear your voice.
This is
a father-son team, by the way.
A father-son team?
Mm-hmm. Our first father-son team.
Really? How old is the son?
32.
32, huh?
Yes.
What made you guys decide to go and take such an extensive course?
When I first heard Ed on your program, I knew this is what we had to do. You didn't give any contact information, so I had to track him down, and it was not easy, but I did it.
Yeah, Ed is not easy to track down, that's
no,
true.
But I was able to track him down, and I knew that the opportunity was fleeting, so I knew I had to act quickly.
And is there any question in your mind that this is real?
No, mine. No question in my mind either.
No, huh? You saw it demonstrated. You did it yourself. You learned how to do it.
Absolutely.
And you've looked at some of the things we've been talking about tonight.
Yes.
Well, we just got in, actually, just a few minutes ago. So to say yes is to hear the beginning of the program.
Yeah, well, I really appreciate getting both of you on the line. I've never talked, you know, on the air to a graduate of SciTech before.
Actually, you did one time.
Did I?
It was me. It was almost the end of the show. This is Charles, the son. It was the very end of the show, and the last time Ed was on, I believe, and he had already signed off, and I called in and babbled
for
a couple of seconds.
How long was the course that you folks took?
11 days, was it?
Well, a total of 10 with 9 days with a 1 day off in the middle, making it 10.
10 days, huh? And what would you say to people out there who doubt this, who doubt? You know, there's a lot of people who doubt. They think this is New Age gobbledygook.
It's as old as man, and it's new because we've forgotten, and now we're again learning.
And do you see the future ominously, as Ed does, with regard to the environment?
I would say, this is Charles, I would say that even a blind man could see that we're in for a heap of trouble.
Yeah, you two are right. I'm afraid it's pretty easy to see now.
Your book is very accurate, Ed. Art.
Thank you.
Excuse me.
All right, well, listen, you two, I just wanted to pop this one in on Ed, and I wanted to hear from somebody who had actually graduated. Do you use
Barely.
Do you use this now in your, I don't want to say everyday lives, but do you use it? Have you used it since graduation?
We have used it since graduation. I have used it since graduation. This is Richard. And haven't used it for a time. And I need to get back to it, and I need to be in touch with Ed for some refreshment.
All right.
And here, Charles.
All right. Well, listen, both of you, I won't hold you. I really thank you for coming on at this late hour.
And I would just like to say in closing, I'd say for on behalf of our world anyway, thanks to Ed and Joni and all of the SciTech staff for bringing this great skill into the population.
All right, gentlemen.
Thanks, Ed.
Good to hear your voice.
Well,
strangers.
There you are, Ed, a couple of graduates. Let's turn our attention for a moment to Malachi, Father Malachi Martin. He is one of the most intriguing, real individuals that that I've ever had the pleasure to interview. And he has made certain references to the future that seem to coincide with yours, Ed, as, by the way, the Hopis have as well in their prophecy. So much of this seems to have a lot of synchronicity to it regarding our rather immediate future. What can you tell us about Father Martin?
It's nothing about Father Martin. It's a series of topical searches that are really in his bailiwick. I think he'd be very interested in, but actually requests that were submitted to SciTech, sort of popular demand cases.
Right.
By topical search, I mean that instead of a discrete target, a thing or a person or a place or an event,
right,
we're looking at a topic, and we don't really know the parameters of the search. So it's sort of a very general swath. We begin with a series of TRV, technical remote viewing probes, to see what we're dealing with. And we conducted these probes against four topics that were very, very interesting to us. And I want to give you the results of those probes if you're interested.
Am I interested?
One of them is the topic of 666.
The number of the beast.
Mm-hmm. And in all cases, when we target that as a topical idea using our methods and techniques, the results are the same. Money. Now, I thought we were looking at, my idea was, well, gee, is this a computer chip or all these things that
money
have been talked about? But all we get is just
money. Money.
That's it.
Wow.
It was just downright flabbergasting.
All right.
Okay.
That's one.
The mark of the beast
is money.
No, it is not money. 666 has.
You're saying 666 is not the mark of the beast. That's the mark of money. The mark of the beast is.
These are the ideas that are embedded in the collective unconscious. Associated with 666 is money. Associated with the mark of the beast are animal parts in human bodies, and essentially xenotransplants, a whole new industry, which is a very interesting thing. And I'd like to really have a private discussion with Father Martin about this, because what that means is the potential for people with a lot of money to buy cow's hearts or a pig's bladder or things like that to replace, as your parts wear out, our natural parts, to replace them with the parts of beasts, and thereby rendering you immortal. And so your soul is trapped in this body, which is slowly but surely becoming more beast-like, and you are really, you gain immortality, but your soul is trapped here on terra firma. And I'm not so certain that that's allowable in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah. Well, you know, we had the cloning of Dolly. Then, more recently, we had the introduction of the human, or part of the human genome, into a cloned animal. And they showed a photograph of this lamb with a human gene. And what they are suggesting is exactly what you're talking about, that it may be possible in the future to make animal organs, because of genetics, compatible with human beings, so that, as you point out, we can use animal organs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
boy, Ed, we're in a strange time.
If you're wealthy enough to buy those parts, they can continuously be replaced.
I've got to.
We have two other topics, too.
Yeah, okay, we'll get to those. But I've got to agree with you, Ed. I'm not so sure in the grand scheme of things, and I'm not so sure I'm not talking about God now, that this is something we ought to be doing. I'm very thoughtful on that matter. Anyway, you say there are two more things.
The Antichrist.
Yes.
I put this one off for a couple of years, actually. I was a little bit spooked by it, to tell you the truth. I don't spook easily. But this one, I didn't know if I wanted to know. And we ran it as a project. And now, when we run these, the viewers are in the blind. They do not know what the target is.
Right.
Okay. So that should be stressed. And they're advanced targets, too. You wouldn't want to try this as an inexperienced viewer. they're too difficult to handle. The Antichrist is a field effect. It's not a person. This was very surprising. That's why I'm talking about it, because it was surprising to us.
A field effect.
A field effect that exists in all of us, as opposed to something else termed in modern Christianity the false prophet. Now, this is still in progress. It's very scary. Like I say, I don't scare easily, but this one, this idea, is sort of the cutting edge, the manifestation of the idea of the Antichrist in flesh and blood. A person, but not really a person. It looks like a person. I'm using the word it because I don't know what to call this. I've never seen anything like it.
So if I'm hearing this correctly, I'm not sure I am. You're saying this is an effect that will manifest itself in all of us.
That's the Antichrist. When we run that term as a topic, we get sort of a field effect that exists everywhere. But when we attack the topical term called the false prophet, we get a physical, I'll call it a person for now, a physical person and an individual. It's really an entity that's masquerading as a person. And this, if remote viewing does nothing else except track and identify and maintain a track of this false prophet, then it's accomplished its goal, because this is a scary thing. And we're working on that now to see where it is in time and when it will manifest itself here in physical form.
We haven't hit the fourth thing yet, but I've already got a
question.
That's
the fourth thing.
What is? All right. I've got a question I want to ask.
Mm-hmm.
How locked in stone are the events that we're talking about? Have you yet determined whether there are various timelines and various possibilities for the future, or at some point do things become locked in, or, Ed, are things always locked in?
The potentials are multivariate. There are potentials to do any number of things, but the actual routes that we take, those are the real timelines. There aren't any alternative timelines, necessarily. There are alternative futures, roads that we can take. But when you have a large momentum, a whole lot of inertia that's built up, and the direction is fairly predictable. Let me give you an example. I've used this before. Geophysical events like earthquakes and volcanoes, those are really easy things to predict. It's almost a done deal, fait accompli. But individual participation in events is not a given.
What about collective? In other words,
collectively, like wars and things like that.
Yes.
Those are pretty easy to predict, unfortunately.
And not so easy to avoid.
No, I'd have to say no, because they result from the decisions of a great number of people en masse, and that's like a bit, that's tantamount to an earthquake, allegorically speaking.
Wow. So
individuals.
These are the kinds of benchmarks that you look for in the past or the future.
Yes.
These collective gigantic events that you can sort of timestamp with.
Right. So that when we know, for instance, for next spring, for instance, we know that the hurricane season on the American East Coast, the North American East Coast, will be absolutely devastating. We know that that's followed by the next milestone, and then when we see the next milestone, we know what's after that. So although we cannot discern chronological periods, we can discern the milestones that bracket events that way.
That makes sense. You know what I don't like about all this is it makes sense.
That's one of the reasons why technical remote viewing is a seller, why it sells, because it makes sense.
Yeah. Guess for me, what effect, having so many remote viewers out there, just guess for me, I'm really, really curious. I mean, here you will have people roaming at will, not a few, as there once were with the military program, or even quite a few, as there may be now, but perhaps even millions, ultimately, certainly hundreds of thousands at the very least, with this ability. How might that affect events that seem to be coming. Could remote viewing, in other words, actually begin to change it?
It will, in terms of because we can see, we have a grander vision, and we have almost more dimensions that we can look at. We have more room to move and to maneuver.
Put simply, Ed, if an individual, for example, was able to look ahead in time and see that an 18-wheeler was going to squish him into roadkill, he'd be sure and stay out of the way of an 18-wheeler at the appropriate point. So if mankind, hundreds of thousands or even millions of people, began to see what was coming, they'd get out of the way of the 18-wheeler, wouldn't they?
It hasn't been my experience all the time that that's necessarily true.
But isn't that one possibility of the
it is.
Exponential growth of remote viewing?
Well, first of all, what's going to happen is this is going to do an end run around orthodox science.
Uh-huh.
You're going to have a lot of people out there who are demonstrating every day and many times a day that this is real, that they just found something they were looking for, whether it's the Lost Dutchman mine or a missing brooch or whatever,
right,
over and over again. And science is going to be forced to look at this. There are elements of science that are looking at it now. As you know, we train scientists and engineers. But orthodox mainstream science is going to be forced to stand up and take note. And then culturally, something's going to happen. I don't know what that is right now. I haven't had time to look.
Well, you have referred many times to a spiritual event. At least that's the way you described it, as possibly a spiritual event.
We have not been able to. We've bottomed out on that one, Art. We just have not been able to get our teeth into that effectively.
So there are some places that you cannot yet go.
It appears so. Mm-hmm. Off limits or sacred or however you want to call it. Maybe, or we might not have the hardware or the software, might not have the brain power or the programming yet to be able to discern the forms and the natures of these kinds of events.
How much more growth is possible, do you feel, with remote viewing? Is there still a lot to learn for you? I mean, you're the guy at the top right now. Is there still a lot ahead of us?
I'm not going to do any more research on this. I'm passing the baton to other people. I have my own pet projects. I believe that it's going to undergo a tremendous a quantum leap in evolution, but I don't know what that's going to look like. I just feel that it's going to happen.
All right. This has been good and comprehensive, Ed. The phones have been ringing like crazy. Let's give them an hour of telephone calls, and we will have done it. All right?
Okay, we'll do that.
All right. Ed Dames, Major Ed Dames from SciTech, is my guest. I suspect we probably have your attention. When we come back, we're going to dive into the telephones.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from August 4th, 1997. Presents Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight's program originally aired August 4th, 1997.
Obviously, because of all the information in this program, I know I can already tell because of all the faxes I'm getting, a lot of you are going to want copies of this program. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Ed Dames. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, where are you?
This is Marion from Fair Oaks. Hi, Ed.
Hi.
Remember number 48, your mother-son team?
Oh, I certainly do. How could I forget? This is a mother-son team now.
You're kidding.
No, we had a mother-son team, and we've had everything except the father-daughter team.
It was the greatest experience. experience of my life.
In other words, you're another graduate.
Oh, absolutely. I just love taking that course. It's
How long ago did you take the course, ma'am?
February.
February.
Yes.
What do you feel you got out of it? Well, no, a million questions. What made you take it in the first place?
You mentioned that earlier in the program, and I fit into the 20% who have some psychic ability. And all my life, I've been getting into trouble with it because it's uncontrollable, it's unreliable. I don't know when I'm psychic. I don't know when I'm analytical. And my son was the one who heard about Ed Dames on your show and insisted that I go take this course. So I did. And I love it because now I know.
Now you can control it.
Absolutely. And now I know when I'm on and when I'm off. It's great. It really is. I mean, this has answered so many questions for me.
Have you ventured? What have you done with it? This is a good question. Even Ed should be interested. Since leaving SciTech, since you were there physically, what have you done with it?
Let me give you a good example. My son came over to my house one night. He says, "Mom, you got to work a project right now, right now." I said, "Oh boy, you know." So he gave me the project. I was blind. I did not know what I was working on.
Uh-huh.
I came up with the fact that I saw a man with scraggly hair. I came up with colors of black and purple, and it kind of made me think that I might be dealing with a black person. I saw that this person smashed into something or smashed something.
Yes.
And it was a live person. It was not a dead person. And a bunch of other little things I came up with. But after the project was over, my son told me what I was looking at. And what had happened is one of his very good friends had been missing for 4 days. And he says, "I'm going right now over to the wife and tell her he's alive." Now, what happened was the next morning after I had run this project, my son's friend walked out of the woods. He had been in the woods for 4 days. He had smashed his car, Jeep, whatever it was that he took into the mountains near the Oregon border. And when he came out of the woods, he was wearing a purple shirt, and he was filthy from head to toe. That was the black that I saw.
Pretty.
But I knew he was alive.
Pretty practical use, huh?
Absolutely. I mean, it made the wife sleep easier.
So you've used this in your everyday life, then?
Yes. Yes, I have. I've looked at some things coming up in my life, too, and that's kind of spooky and interesting. Just for fun and games, a couple of us worked on the A-10 plane when it first went down. I found a lost heir. Somebody was looking for an heir to a small estate. And I helped find the air.
Ed, do you ever wonder, Ed, what your students do after they've gone, or do they pretty much stay in touch, or do they venture out on their own like this?
I don't even want to ask.
Well, anyway.
Actually, we hire some of our graduates. Please say hi to Alex for me, Mary.
Will do, and say hi to Joni for me.
All right, thank you so much.
I miss you guys.
Thank you, ma'am, so much.
Thank you.
Take care.
No.
Well, that's really interesting. What are the odds of getting a couple of students? Of course, I called one, but this one came in, boom, just like that. Fascinating. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Ed Dames. Good morning.
Hi, Art.
Hi.
This is Chad from Austin.
Austin, Texas.
Yeah.
Yes,
I'm thinking a few shows back, we had Father Martin on.
Yes.
And someone called in and they asked if God could have populated this planet, is it possible for Satan to have populated other planets? And he said yes. And then eventually he said that it was safe to say aliens and UFOs and that kind of thing from other planets was demonic in origin. Now, having said that, I kind of feel like maybe some of what Ed is doing, especially most recently,
mm-hmm.
the laser and contacting, I'm afraid that some of that may be influenced by evil.
Well, I'm sure.
I think the Catholic Church would agree with you. And one of their catechisms about 15 years ago, it certainly points in that direction.
I have some personal opinions along those lines. But yes, there's many people, particularly Catholics, that really are spooked by technical remote viewing because of catechisms that the church has put out.
So, Ed, do you think a lot about that? When I mean, here you're going forth with a project. You might call it even Project Contact. You're calling it Project Starman, but the end result is going to be contact if it works. Are you sure what you're going to connect with?
Yes, sure. I'm I bet my life on it, Art.
Maybe you're doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Caller, thank you very much. Take care. Austin, Texas. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Most of what you are describing as remote viewing, I apparently have been doing all my life. And not having as much control, obviously, but having the ability to cross into certain boundaries, both between what we call extraterrestrials and spiritual-related beings and time, both forward and backwards. I guess my interest here is seeing whether or not I can make contact with Ed in particular, and what he thinks of the possibility that beings coming into physical form with inherent abilities and code signatures that they don't necessarily understand but learn as they use it.
Well, maybe Ed understands what you're saying right now.
Do you understand what I'm saying, Ed?
No, I'm a simple man, and I honestly don't.
I have been used since I was a little kid. Anyone could ask me a question, and I could pull out information and answer questions at will about subjects.
That's direct knowledge.
Okay. All right. There are a lot of people like this. And, you know, inevitably when we do shows like this, people come up and say, oh, I've been remote viewing all my life. Not really.
What we needed as an intelligence collection tool was the consistency to be able to use this ability in life or death situations or where deadly force was to be employed, unfortunately. And the natural abilities, untrained, were slip sliding around and not and hit and miss.
Yeah.
And especially apparent was that the naturals, people with natural ability, the greats, did not know when they were on target. And they did not know when they were off. I
mean, so the information
was still waiting for Japan to sink.
Right. So the information is not of great use when you can't.
Because we don't know when the people who are naturally talented and gifted are on and when they're off. Because they themselves don't have that. And that's what we teach our students. To know when you're on and when you're off.
I've got you. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Yeah, good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Yeah, my name's Matt, and I'm from Fallon, Nevada.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you, Major Dane, there a question here. I pretty much followed your show there, Art, here for about the past year. Matter of fact, it's my birthday tonight, or actually this morning here, and this is the first time being able to get a hold of you here for 12 months.
All right.
It's my mother's birthday today, too.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I am... I followed your show here, and I followed, you know, pretty much Major Daniel through the path, you know, the plant pathogen and everything else. And
right.
I'm wondering, have you guys been able to break through the year 2000 barrier? Is there going to be a light at the end of the tunnel for all of us here? Because my own feeling is that, this is a gut feeling that we are in for some pretty bad times. It's going to come quick, swift, hard, and it's going to be pretty horrific. But in the long run, it's going to be better for all the generations beyond.
This is basically the light at the end of the tunnel question, and you did tonight for the first time answer that you can look past this whatever it is.
Yes, and I couldn't agree with your caller more. There is light at the end of the tunnel, but it's awful grim on the way there. Awful grim.
A rough tunnel.
Yes, that's why I'm choosing not to really talk about it publicly anymore. I'm going to put the monkey on other people's backs now. Let them remote view that. I've done that already.
All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi.
Hello, gentlemen. Good morning.
Good morning, sir. Where are you?
I'm in Ohio.
Okay.
I have just a couple of questions. I was wondering, How long do you estimate for the average person to develop the skills to do technical remote viewing?
Now, there is a good question. Ed, if they had your modules, if somebody had all your modules, which, of course, they can't right now, but let's say they did, and they wanted to sit down and begin to acquire the skills, how long would it take the average person?
With module one and two allows you to solve problems.
Uh-huh.
I would say probably 3 months, 2.5 to 3 months, because you have to practice. It is a skill, and it requires practice. So you practice against unknown targets, blind targets, and we teach you how to set up those problem sets and select them. About 3 months.
Okay.
In hours, how would that be? I mean, are you talking a certain amount of hours a day or per
yes,
week?
Yes, I am. About an hour a day for 3 months.
Okay.
All right.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the call. First time caller line, you're on the air with Major Ed Danes. Hi.
Hi. How's it going? This is the first time I've ever gotten to go through. My name is Mike. I'm calling from Tennessee.
Yes, Mike.
I was wanting to say, he touched on the subject about the Antichrist and the false prophet.
Yes.
And with the new information available on your show, I think it was a week or so ago, about the new computer sentient entity that's capable.
Sentient computers, yeah.
Yeah,
yes.
And the robotics capable of mimicking human movement. Would it be possible that the combination of those two could come together into embodiment of what could be considered an Antichrist or the false prophet?
Well, I thought Ed had a particularly good answer with regard to the Antichrist. But, Ed, it is true that we're on the edge of artificial intelligence. The Japanese just developed a robot that moves with fluid motion, albeit an early crude one, but it's pretty eerie to watch. We're on the edge of some pretty strange stuff.
The only, in terms of artificial intelligence and robotics, and there is a sentient machine over the horizon, and it has the characteristics of, generally speaking, a sort of a loyal patient guard dog type of a feel to it. And that's the only thing we've really been able to roll up against in the future in terms of artificial intelligence.
A loyal patient guard dog.
Yeah.
At least that doesn't sound too awful.
No, it doesn't.
East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Good morning.
Good morning, Art Johns from Pittsburgh.
Yes, sir.
I'd like to ask the Major, could he share with the audience, I'm sure that him and his team has remote viewed the Cydonia area.
Ah. Ah, yes, of course, Cydonia, Mars. What about it, Major?
We remote viewed it extensively since 1986, and particularly the feature that's been come to be known as the tetrahedron.
Yes.
That specific feature, and that is it's a man-made feature, and we look at it extensively.
Do you really want to say man-made, or do you want to say artificial?
there was another race on Mars a long, long time ago, and they were, for all intents and purposes, like us. They breathed different gases, and they were different genetically, but they were men and women.
Men. All right. Stay right there. We've got a half hour to go.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from August 4th, 1997. You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from August 4th, 1997.
And if you've been listening to this program and still have your breath, you're doing all right. people are writing, what about the Phoenix Lights? What about the Phoenix Lights? We covered that earlier. And Ed Dames is indeed going to target the Phoenix Lights, and that will be a subject for an upcoming show. Back now to Major Ed Dames, and here's one by fax that I consider to be a really good question, Ed. Is there any way for someone to block, intercept, or otherwise interrupt a remote view? I had heard of psychic guards around the White House, and I was wondering if such a thing might be done to actually prevent technical remote viewing. Is that a question you can answer?
Yes, it's a myth. Can't be done. The only things that we've run into, and I hope I don't lose some tape sales on this one, the only thing that we know of that can effectively block or edit our information is angels. We seem to be sharing this space with what I would call an angelic mind.
Why do you say angels or angelic presences? Why? What leads you to use that name?
The things that we have seen, although we cannot perceive their form, we know that there are intelligences that are present as entities in this space where we're at when we remote view. And having studied those over the years, they fit the definition that the church fathers have given to angels. And so we call them angels. They appear to fit the description in every way, description.
So then why not? Angels.
Right, yeah.
First time caller line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi.
Hello.
Hello. I can barely hear you. Where are you?
Jackson, Mississippi.
All right. Well, on the air you are, sir. Go ahead.
Yes. Ed, this is John Doe of Lucidale.
John Doe, huh?
Yes, but
right.
From Jackson. Lucidale, Mississippi, is number one in the South for sightings. You might not hear any information about that, but this is John Doe, and he would tell you why.
Sir, I'm not clear what you're saying.
Yes, yes.
But what is it you're telling us?
UFO sightings. UFO sightings.
Oh, sightings.
In Lucidale, Mississippi. They are no longer UFOs. They are IFOs. They have been identified. As you may know, a week or a couple of days ago on Fox 40, they showed pictures of a UFO hovering over the earth. And
They showed actually many pictures. He's referring, Ed, to the Fox special. I don't know whether you have.
I don't watch television.
You don't watch TV?
No, I haven't.
Really?
Many of you. I know about it because I read the newspaper. But
What they did is they had a program called UFOs: The Best Video Evidence. And of course, we live in the age of camcorders, and there was some very impressive video evidence of these things, you know.
Those are great targets because they make, you have chain of custody. The information that you're downloading via TRV is directly attributable to that specific thing that's on the video as opposed to a generic.
And so in that way, you can go after the Phoenix Lights.
Absolutely. I don't know what they look like yet, but we're going to make sure that you and your listeners who are interested understand that the specific photo that is generally agreed to be representative of that event is what our target is, and then we go out, then we go into the matrix, the collective unconscious.
Yeah, I've got you. Wildcard line, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi.
Hi, this is Jesse in Las Vegas.
Hi, Jesse.
Major Dames, I was wondering concerning the Americas, both North and South America, if there are any areas or regions that you would consider safe zones, or perhaps you would consider them more suitable to human survival in light of the upcoming events.
Actually, there is a spot in Canada, right over the U.S. line in it's called Lake Valley, and western or mid British Columbia.
That's kind of ironic. I was thinking like maybe around Edmonton, Alberta, about that latitude.
It's a little bit too far north, but survivability is pretty high in that region.
You know, it's interesting, Ed. If we go back a year to when we did the very first program you and I did, the alarm bells are going off, because I remember you're saying exactly that same thing that long ago, a year ago. I remember the question about safe zones, and you identified one just exactly where you said it was just now. So,
no, I don't remember that.
I do. I do. And there were a couple of others, and one you wouldn't name. And my guess would be it's probably somewhere near Polynesia. Just a wild guess. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi.
Good morning, gentlemen. I was just curious about the connection with Colonel Philip Corso. We're all aware of how he says that crash debris was seeded into the industrial complex.
Yes.
And I was curious, Mr. Dames referred to the time travel problem where they went back and took all the tangible evidence.
Yes.
And I was wondering if he would be suggesting that Colonel Corso is not saying...
In other words, all of that evidence should have disappeared.
Right. Or if possible, that the evidence that, or the things that Colonel Corso fed to the complex was, in fact, from possibly other retrievals, and he was specifically speaking about Roswell alone.
All right. Good question, Ed. You said virtually the stuff disappeared, so what could Corso have had?
Well, remember that it wasn't policed up. It disappeared because the event all of a sudden didn't happen. So it vaporized. It vanished. It wasn't there. Colonel Corso was a project manager. Project managers in the military-industrial community at the Department of Defense level are colonels. And what they do is most of the time,
mm-hmm.
Particularly in the past, they did not understand science and technology. But they managed many brilliant scientists and engineers, never understanding the physics and the technology behind it. All that we cared about as project managers, I was one for several projects, was build this and make sure it works so I can use it in battle.
Sure.
Period. And the wireheads and the scientists that designed the equipment were the ones that really had access to the science and technology. Whatever they told the project manager was the only thing the project manager had to deal with. Okay? So sometimes stories get convoluted, and sometimes hearsay becomes, well, I remember that as fact over the years, and I've seen this happen again and again. There was no tangible debris. There was no infiltration of physical technology into mainstream technology. That didn't happen.
All right. You have looked at the Roswell crash, but it is reasonable to conclude that over all these years, there may have been others.
There was another crash that we know about, and it was not an alien craft. And I mentioned this once before. It was the first of a series of tests that will begin in a couple of years. And what happens in the first sequence of tests on this prototype model of a flying thing is that it spins out and away. It essentially disappears and moves back in about five decades and crashes. When that crashes, it has technology aboard that represents four or five generations of technology ahead
uh-huh.
of what was available there.
Looking at our own stuff.
And for all intents and purposes, it's alien because we don't have the technological base to even understand the material science, much less the physics and the electronics.
The magic thing.
That's right.
Uh-huh. All right. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hi.
Yes, it's Kathy from Phoenix.
Hi, Kathy.
Pretend I have an IQ of 70, and let me summarize the one point that has gotten me stymied tonight.
All right.
Aliens are watching us. These aliens will occupy the Earth with human beings, but they are angry. Am I right?
I think you're mixing a lot of things together here. Ed, did you say aliens are watching us?
There is a race. I would not call them alien for other reasons. I'd say they're very, very similar to ourselves. Genetically, they're similar. So I don't call them aliens.
Okay, they are watching us.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
They are angry.
Yes.
Why are they angry?
Because this is a home. Think of them as colonists.
Right.
Think of them as a resettlement colony. Coming back to an ancestral homeland, either coming back from the past or back from the future, it doesn't matter at this juncture.
Okay, and they are upset with the way we are treating their home.
That's correct.
If they are that advanced, why don't they step in and help us?
Because we share a common destiny, and we're participating on, we have to participate on our own in a destiny. And also, there's some other operational factors. One is there are not that many of them, perhaps 20,000.
Oh. So, in other words, this is more like a non-intervention type thing?
I'd rather sit down with them and have a tete-a-tete and ask them those questions than try to dig down. Honestly, that's one of the reasons why Starman exists, is to do just that. Instead of trying to use remote viewing, because it is a lot of work to do this, to discern all of their cultural background, their history, and those kinds of things. I'd rather meet them on neutral turf.
So Ed, you're using technical remote viewing to assemble the mechanical aspects of a way to initiate communication.
A signal beacon, that's correct.
Okay.
So that we can ask those questions.
Oh, very good.
All
okay.
Right. All right, ma'am?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you very much. First time caller line, you're on the air with Major Ed Danes. Hi.
Yes, how you doing?
Turn your radio off, please.
Thank you.
Where are you?
I'm back here in Mississippi.
Okay, we just talked to you, sir. One call per show, let's name the tune. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Danes. Hi.
Hello, Art.
Hello.
As someone who has been plagued by psychic activity my whole life, I would have to agree with everything that Ed is saying.
You said plagued by.
Plagued by. Very confusing growing up, predicting things and stuff like that. There was one time I predicted my father's best friend's death. That was about the age of 12. As far as remote viewing and stuff goes, though, I'm 27 now. I've been trying to tie all this together. And as far as remote viewing goes and looking in time and stuff, I've been experimenting with sending messages back to myself.
Really?
Yeah. And I've had some very interesting results. I've been trying to win the lottery, of course.
Well, that's a good point.
Well, I mean, that's the first thing you do, right?
Sure.
And some of the results I'm having is instead of trying to send back digits, that doesn't seem to work very well, I try to, like, maybe get the lottery card, fill out the little black dots, and then try to send back the pattern of the dots.
Huh.
And that seems to get close. Like, they're adjacent to each other. Like, the patterns are there.
Ed, would that be a way around the number problem?
Yes, as a matter of fact, it is. It's an analog way around the number problem. As long as you stay in a right brain modality and not move over to that linear left brain modality, you can get away with things like that. But essentially what he's doing is you're remote viewing. You are remote viewing.
Is that basically what it is?
Yeah. And for people like me and who don't understand what it's like to grow up and have natural talent, life can be very scary indeed because you're perceiving a lot more information that you can't form fit into any knowns. And that's pretty scary for people.
Well, it's more trying to find guidance. You know, I was a great Roman Catholic. You know, it just didn't work out, you know.
Well,
it's considered a bad thing.
They're not going to let you remote view either. Because,
no, they're not.
A priesthood needs to maintain. You have to go to them to get that kind of license to do that.
Right, right. Art, since I'm on the air, can I just ask permission? Can I have maybe give you a code word here so I can get you to recognize one of my emails?
Sure.
Let's say the word will be. Should I do it off the air or?
No.
Okay,
Of course, if you do it on the air, I might get a thousand.
Well, I'm working at Kinko's right now, so we'll say coil binding.
Coil binding, all right. Well, I'll remember that one, all right.
All right, thank you very much, gentlemen.
Take care. Ed, what about remote viewing for profit? Now, he just sort of touched on it a little bit, but one would presume that you could look ahead at the stock market and make general determinations about whether the present 8,000 plus or 8,200, whatever it is right
Absolutely.
Now.
You can do all of that. And, in fact, I've often joked with my sons about collectibles. Who knows what the collectible is going to be, 10 years from now. Remote view that and, find out what's collectible, coffee cups or telephones or whatever.
So this is not wrong. I mean, it is not sort of cosmically or karmically wrong to profit by it?
I don't have the answer to that, Art. I don't know.
Well, that's a good answer in itself. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Major Ed Dames. Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Turn your radio off, please. Or we're going to have to clear the line.
Okay.
All right. Where are you?
I'm in Missouri.
Missouri. All right. Go ahead.
Okay. And this is the Art Bell Show.
Yes.
Great. Art, love your show. Just a quick question for Major Dames.
Sure.
What do you see in the, or what is your remote viewing scene for like the Midwest, this area, Missouri, Illinois, as far as future events? Is this not a good place to be, or should we be heading somewhere else?
Haven't focused on that specifically, and I'm going to wait for the people to learn how to do this using the tapes to do it for themselves. Because it's just too much to look at and too much to do. It's time to put these skills in the other people's hands so they can do this for themselves.
And that's exactly what you're doing. Next time we get on the air, whenever that is, Ed, hopefully the Phoenix Lights, you might have some sort of answers for us on those. Those have been really, really plaguing us.
Yeah, you can bet that we will.
All right. Any other immediate interesting targets, or do you want suggestions about targets?
No, we've dropped all of our in-house. We have a couple more murders we have to wrap up, but we're getting out of the murder business. We're going to concentrate on Starman and put a lot of resources into technical support for these tapes. I'm moving right over to the internet for my students now after we're off the phone, and we spend a lot of time there.
So, in other words, your students should know that you're about to join them in the chat room.
That's correct. In my chat room on my website.
All right. Which is accessible through mine, or what is your web address?
www.trv-psitech.com.
Oh. Well, those of you who didn't get that, go to my website and click on Ed's name there, and it'll take you right over. Ed, thank you.
Happy anniversary again, Art.
Thank you.
And Ramon.
Good night.
Good night.
All right. Well, we've done it again. Tomorrow night, Bob Guccione of Penthouse Magazine fame is going to be here. We will ask him about First Amendment issues, as you might imagine. And we're going to also ask him about cancer, because his wife has cancer. And she's well on the way to being free of it, and he thinks he's got the answer. Tomorrow night, Bob Guccione. Good night.